Blog Talk Radio.
We've had the best football picks for a decade, and we ain't stopping now. Live from the IMLD home studios, in its 10th season, this is, in much less detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Now your host, Jay and Dre. That's right, you better listen in, or we're going to send Tom Brady to your house to break up your marriage. Actually, I'm the one that should be watching out the terrible week that I just had. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. We are here with you live on a Saturday night, October the 29th, 2022. I'm Dre. He's Jay. I'm just plain old Dre with a 5-9 week. He's Jay with a 7-7 week and a classic bear whispering that he pulled off on Monday night. He told everybody what was going to happen, and that's exactly what happened, is what seems to happen on a regular. The Chicago Bears, with no reason to compete in an NFC road primetime game, they get it done again. I don't understand how JC's are coming, but you did it, so all props to you for that one.
I can't give away all my secrets, although I've told you the formula many times. But
yeah,
it you know, sometimes those stars just align. And yeah, the bear whisperer strikes again. It felt good, I'll tell you that. I mean, it really felt good pulling off the Sunday night, Monday night sweep, because I really needed that. We were pretty much neck and neck coming out of the Sunday day slate. And so going into the primetime matchups, disagreeing on both, I was like, oh, man, you know, if I got to start making up some ground here. And I did. So, you know, I get the whatever the hell that was on Sunday night, where if you just would have stopped the game at halftime, that would have been the same result. That was one of the weirdest games, watching the Dolphins come out, you know, hair on fire, moving the ball up. And so as soon as that script went off, they didn't know what to do. Yeah. And then that just game of keep away that they burg. And then, yeah, whatever that egg was that the Patriots laid against the Bears, I don't know. I had that weird feeling like they were due. You know, not a great team kind of riding high. And that is the classic Bears spot, to just show up for no reason and just completely dominate the other team.
You certainly didn't see it happening that way. You did not call for Bill Belichick to bench his starting quarterback immediately and go to the backup and have the backup look decent until he started throwing the ball all around the other team.
I don't know. I don't have an award for that, but I don't know what the hell that was with that. You know, Mac Jones comes out, throws an ugly pick, gets immediately benched. Bailey Zappi goes on a couple of drives. Then he starts throwing ugly picks.
Yeah.
So, and then, yeah, and the Bears just kind of took advantage. They were there. They were the recipients of catching the Patriots team not at their best, and it worked out for me. So, not going to complain.
I got an award for it, but we'll get to that. I don't have the right to talk about any of my awards, because you were the best performer of the both of us last week. So that means you get the honors, Jay.
What
the best of week 7?
You know, I don't. Sometimes chalk is the easiest way to go, but I am going to give it to the thorough dismantling of the 49ers laid on them by the Kansas City Chiefs. I said they needed it coming off the loss, and they brought everything in that game. They actually brought Mecole Hardman to that game. Hey, go figure.
The Mecole Hardman sighting. He was on side of the milk carton.
Ago, 2 weeks ago, it was the Juju show, and then last week, it's the Mecole Hardman show, and they came out. They looked every bit as good as, let's say, that even the Bills came out and looked, in some of their dominant performances. The Chiefs and the Bills are clearly the best two teams in the AFC. I don't think the Chiefs liked losing that game to Buffalo, and they took that out on the 49ers, putting 44 up on the Niners, who were actually getting defensive pieces back, which makes it even more impressive because, you know, the talk would had been about how banged up the Niners were. Now they were starting to actually gain some bit of health. It didn't matter. That was the Patrick Mahomes show. He showed that he was the best quarterback on the field. No Jimmy G show in that game. And I'm definitely – I got to give it to the Chiefs. Credit where credit's due.
No, absolutely. Give it up to them. Hey. So I'll incorporate them into my best of the week. It wasn't just the Chiefs. It was, and maybe I'm just a fiend for speed, and maybe I just pop big when I see that, but I love it when teams recognize their advantage with speed and use it and take full advantage of it. Kansas City took full advantage of it. The Bengals took full advantage of it. The Seahawks took full advantage of it. The Raiders took full advantage of their speed. Even the Bears, with whatever that was Monday night, it was really predicated on speed and sort of replicating almost like a Ravens-like offense with Justin Fields playing the Lamar Jackson role of just, hey, every two or three plays, I'm going to take the ball and run as fast as I can and dare you to stop me. And the Patriots couldn't stop. All those teams really using their speed to their best advantage. And I feel like it's basic and rudimentary and fundamental. When you have that speed advantage, use it. I've been yelling that at the Chiefs for it feels like 5-6 years now. You are the fastest team on the field. Every time you take the field, use that speed to your full advantage. And that's exactly what the Chiefs did in San Francisco and all those other teams too. Like, there was a clear advantage that they could use and exploit using their speed. The Seahawks were, that was the most, almost the most impressive or surprising to me because of DK Metcalf getting hurt and Tyler Lockett coming in banged up. And Geno Smith said, okay, that's fine. I'll find this Marquise Goodwin guy who used to be good years ago and just keep exploiting him. Use the speed you got. Exploit it and take advantage of those opportunities when you have them, because you don't have those opportunities all the time. Usually you have to scheme it up and devise game. But just use the speed, man. Just, it's so much easier to just use the speed when you have that advantage. And those teams really took full advantage as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, how's that move to Los Angeles working out for the Clippers there? They're getting housed in their own building with regularity this year.
I mean, it's hard enough playing in a building where half the crowd is going to be against you every week, and it's even harder to do that when your quarterback has broken rib cartilage. I think we kind of forget about how hurt and beat up Justin Herbert is because he keeps trying to play through it, but I'm sorry, he's just not as effective. It's pretty clear to me.
No, 5.7 yards per attempt against the Legion of Room.
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't let Geno Smith was the best quarterback on the field that day. You can't let that happen.
Yeah, starting to feel a little Baker Mayfield, reminiscent.
Ooh.
From last year, not that Herbert is a Mayfield-level talent. Herbert is immensely talented, but I'm saying he's clearly playing when he probably shouldn't be.
That's possibly true. He probably should take at least a week or two to kind of step back and let himself heal up a little bit.
I don't know when are they on their bye this week?
They sure are. He finally gets the rest.
There you go.
And the Saints are doing that with Jameis Winston. Like, he had the broken bones in his back and tried to play through it 1 week, and they're like, nah, it's enough of that. we've seen that. That's you're already a hostile, hit-or-miss, volatile quarterback when you're healthy. Now you're trying to play through broken bones in your back. Nah, we got Red Rival here. We're good. Take a seat.
Yeah.
So what was the worst of the week for you?
You know, in a week full of it, I mean, in a normal week, there were like two or three things even beyond what I chose as the worst of the week that would be slam dunk automatic worst of the week caliber performances. That what the Packers did losing to Washington, it's still not my worst of the week. That's how bad the worst of the week is. I think this one's pretty obvious. I'm giving it to Tommy and the Bucks for losing 21 to 3 to a team that is tanking. I mean, I understand the Packers losing to Washington. Washington's at least trying. They're bad. They're both bad. But, you know, hey, bad, you know, fine. They lost. We should have seen that coming. We didn't. I think that was we gave the Packers one for the road because that's it. They're BQD. I'm pretty sure because they're going into. They couldn't just come out of this run to go on to the schedule that they're coming up now. That they're done. So that experiment has failed. But then you put Tommy and Tampa in a team that has talent. You know that there's no lack of quality surrounding Tom Brady in that offense with Fournette. Godwin and Evans, and they give up 21. That's fine. But they scored 3 points like the Panthers. That is inexcusable. Ironically, I know I texted you this week about it. I actually had, when I listened to the show from last week, I called the score of this game.
Yeah.
I just had the wrong winner.
Oh.
I said, this is, guys, that 21-3 is a cover. And I'm like, wait. And I looked back. I was like, man, that was a 21-3 game. Problem was we had the Bucks covering.
Yeah.
A massive number for yet another example of a almost two-touchdown favorite getting their doors blown off, which just it seems to be one or two of those every season. And, By virtue of beating the Bucks, the Panthers and the Falcons are actually playing for first place tomorrow.
Oh, my God.
I didn't know if you knew that.
I'm sure I heard it somewhere and just let
it pass
through.
But that's how bad
that
was. That, by far, was the worst of the week.
It didn't have to be 21-3. It could have been 21-10 because Mike Evans had a pass being 11 yards open. And it was right in his hands.
Start the game. But I will say, unfortunately, Tommy with his divorce, but we are all Giselle because we've all wanted a divorce from Tom Brady for the last 13 years.
Well, we're not quite Giselle. She wants him home. We don't want him anywhere near us. She's divorcing him because he won't come home, and we want to divorce him because we want him to go home. Go home.
Just
see your
kids. He chose that.
Yeah. Well, he didn't know it was going to be this. He didn't know it was going to be quite this.
And they go out on Thursday and get beat, too.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. How rare is it for this late in the season for the home team on Thursday night to find a way to come up short? But this team, this Buccaneers team, this is a unique situation. This team is there's going to be stories told about this team for a long, long time, and we're not even done yet. We're not even halfway through the season. That was quite the thing and quite the week for Tom Brady. And still, I won't give him my worst of the week. I'm going off the board. I'm going off the field for my worst of the week because it can kind of go any week to choose this organization and the things that's swirling around them. But if everything feels like it's about to come to some sort of a head for Dan Snyder and the Washington's, Commandos, whatever. So first you get the ESPN hit job, which that's quite the piece. If you haven't read it, that came out a couple weeks ago. A lot of anonymous sources, a lot of people saying things off the record because you don't want to get on Dan Snyder's bad side and say things on the record, so I understand that. So a lot of anonymous, but and quite frankly, a lot of things about his behavior and character that's believable, but also kind of borders on parody. Like, and you won't believe what else he does. He eats kittens, like stuff like depicting just how vindictive crazy that he can be, which. I don't believe some of the stuff in there, but just the fact that it's a partner. ESPN is paying millions upon millions of dollars to broadcast Monday Night Football. They are a partner of the NFL, and even they had to put this piece out because they think Dan Snyder is that terrible of a human being and that bad of a guy. Just the fact that do you know how many people had to approve that article before ESPN.com put it out? Like all the higher ups had to see that and go, oh, I don't know. Are we sure about this? So if nothing else, it had to have been well researched and well lawyered up and well covered legally by ESPN for them to even want to put something like that out. Look at all the stuff that all the other owners, you got Bob Kraft getting blowjobs at massage parlors. You got Jerry Jones impregnating women outside of his marriage. You got so many owners that do so many crazy things, and they don't get hit jobs like this on ESPN.com. So there's a lot going on there. There's a lot of owners that are against Dan Snyder that are happy to see something like this. There are a lot of people waiting for him to go down. So then why it comes to a head this week and why it's the worst of the week is because Dan Snyder's wife, Tanya, who by that article and by all accounts appears to be about as bad a human being as Dan Snyder is, she decides, I'm going to come to the next home game this past Sunday, and I'm going to rally the troops, and I'm going to get in front of the crowd, and I'm going to try to get people on our good side and turn the tide of public opinion and public relations. And she gets on a microphone at some point and talks to the people there and decides to finish off her comments with a good old hearty hail to the Redskins. Lady?
Ooh, yeah.
Do you not remember what your organization just went through to get rid of that name after your stupid-ass husband swore up and down that they were never changing the name of that team once the money started going away and the sponsors started going away? Oh, okay, on second thought, we'll become the Washington football team, yay sports, and now the Commanders, whatever. So she just basically spit in all of that, face of all of that. All the statements Washington keeps putting out in response to these columns and comments by Jim Irsay and whatnot are, we are progressing as an organization. We've made tremendous progress. No, you haven't. Not when you're going to get a microphone and stand up there and go hail to the Redskins. No, obviously you haven't made a whole lot of progress. So that was just extremely – it's not just tone deaf, but that's on purpose. That is a thumb in the eye on purpose for everybody that wanted to get rid of that name. That's her telling everybody, hey, we did that just for public relations. We really don't want to change the name. We really don't care about how insensitive it is. Yeah, it just feels like there's going to be something coming real soon to sort of, I don't know if they're going to be able to force him out, force him to sell the team. Snyder's making Jim Irsay look like a sane person. This is how bad it is. Like, Jim Irsay is going on record and grabbing microphones and talking about how Dan Snyder needs to go and they need to take a vote and force him out. And Snyder's ramblings and responses are making Irsay actually look good. So that's why it just feels like this has got to come to a head soon, because it just can't keep going like this.
That's a dumpster fire. I mean, that's almost a lifetime achievement award. I mean, we've given a few of those out so far this year on our awards where, you know, the creeping doom is coming up and it all starts to come to a head. And it's not over. It's going to keep going. This might creep up a few more times. I wish it would go away.
Yeah. Well, the big headline of the story is that it's not over because apparently Dan Snyder is such a vindictive person that he's got like dossiers out on the owners and on Roger Goodell even. And anybody that's going to try to take him down, basically he's going to do the, I'm the bad guy. I'm not going down unless everyone else is going down with me. He's doing his best Scarface impersonation.
Yeah, he's gonna do the Jose Canseco.
No, he's gonna write a book called Juiced.
Yeah,
or If I Did It.
Yeah, I'm a bad guy, but let me tell you about all these other bad guys.
Tell you about everybody else here. Yeah, so that just stinks. All right, off of that, what's your biggest surprise of Week 7?
I'll tell you what, it's not a good – surprises aren't always good, are they?
Oh, no. No, they're not.
Sometimes surprises are bad, and nothing surprised me more than the culmination of the last 3 weeks for the Detroit Lions.
Mm.
They score 0 up in New England. Then they get the bye, and then they get a Dallas score 6. For what had been the highest scoring team in football, you know, over the first 5 weeks, four or five weeks, and then they're 35 points a game, and they come up with six over their last two games.
Yeah,
that was a surprise. That's a surprise.
And the way they do it against the Cowboys, they Dallas forces five turnovers to cover that spread in an ugly one, all in the second half. Detroit led 6-3 at halftime of that game. They were actually winning. But yeah, Dallas.
Another team getting shut out in the second half. That's a trend too.
Lack of adjustments, lack of second half adjustments has definitely been a trend this year. Jamal Williams coughing it up at the 1 yard line. That's it right there. Yeah. That's death. You can't have that. You can't have guys getting the ball, getting ready to score. And not only do you not score, but you give it to the other team. That's just the worst.
Yeah. I'm with you. Lions.
I got my arms up. I don't know. I don't know what to make of that. I was telling everybody to kill those overs with them until further notice, because it looked like they were going to give up points to everybody and they were going to find a way to rally and get them back. And they're not doing that anymore. Ever since Amon-Ra St. Brown came up hurt, that offense has been sort of off the rails, and it kind of goes hand in hand with the running back DeAndre Swift as well. So it's a thin line. You get your offense going one way and you get one or two very key players injured, and that'll throw everything off. So they clearly don't have a very deep team there in Detroit.
And Amon-Ra St. Brown is back, but I don't think he's all the way back.
Right. He's not back. That's for sure.
We'll see if he's back this week. Because this can't continue. I mean, they were putting up, they were hanging in games, and then they've just evaporated these last few games.
Yeah, bagel and then six, like you said. That is a surprise. My surprise was talking about what happened with those legendary quarterbacks. And Tommy loses to P.J. Walker. Aaron Rodgers loses to Taylor Heinicke. So is this end of an era we're looking at with these guys? Is this going to turn around? I mean, neither one of us know, but what's your sort of thumbnail sketch or snap judgment on what's going to happen? Are the Packers or the Buccaneers turning it around in the second half, or is it over for them?
I look at the my issue looking at the Packers is, I mean, they're 3-4, probably about to go get destroyed by the Bills, and then coming off of that, they've got one probably winnable game in the next 4 weeks after this Bills game. It's rough. They have a rough stretch coming up. You know, when you look at Bills, Lions, Cowboys, Titans, Eagles, teams that play directly into their one, first of all, their one big glaring weakness, which I actually heard, I heard Wayne on the radio, driving to work, and they were interviewing Wayne Larrabee, and first of all, he was very optimistic about the Packers' chances against the Bills. Yeah. Oh, good job, Wayne.
Who
pays the check
again?
They pay you for. Good job. Yeah. And, because, the Bills have a banged-up secondary, because that's really held them back so far.
Oh, well, that means everything.
Yeah, especially when you have no wide receivers.
Wayne.
But he was pointing out, he's like, I don't know if a lot of people have noticed, but the big weakness on this Packers team is the run D. Where you been, Wayne? Clearly not a listener of our show, because I've been harping on that Packers crappy run D going back even to last season. They did not fix the big problem. Teams are running on them. Even Washington, they ran okay, but they still ran on them. That defense is atrocious.
Yeah, but you stated you weren't taking the Packers until they shored that up.
Hey, what happened?
Yeah, I gave them one for the road.
Yeah.
I don't see myself picking them for a while. We did. I could have had another game on you if I would have just stuck to my guns. And with the Bucks, I don't know. Maybe Brady gets some fire in his belly with this divorce thing kind of behind him now. But that's still, you don't know what's going on in his head or with that team. Is that the right coach? what's going on with – I was worried about that when Arians left because I thought Arians kind of kept Brady in check. I don't know what's going on with Tampa. Tampa's probably in a, even though they look lost, they're in a better situation just because they played a terrible division. You know, they could just catch fire and go on a 2 or 3 game winning streak and then just look at us, we're back in first place. Things are going better. I don't think that either team, I don't think either one of those has great long-term prospects. I mean, you can clearly see the talent is passing those teams by. And like we said last week, sometimes when it ends quick.
That might be the case. I'm very afraid of that. Like, we're so used to Tommy just kind of, you know, snapping his fingers and turning it around.
Yeah.
I don't see it. I don't know how it's going to happen right now. It's there's no balance on that offense. They're not getting the running from Leonard Fournette, not consistently anyway. And all of his short throws, everybody's onto him now. Everybody knows how to defend him, and he doesn't have the, you know, the Julian Edelman, Wes Welker type guys that know how to get open in those really small spaces and make a whole bunch of very quick moves. Like, he's got the long strider guys, got Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and all the speed guys, but he doesn't have the guys to get it done in the short areas. He really needs a couple of those guys right now, and he doesn't have them.
Yeah. 44 yards rushing for the Bucs on Thursday night.
That's not gonna cut it.
No.
The Packers really scare me just because we were looking at that at this part of the schedule that they just finished, these three games at the beginning of the season. We're like, that's where they might figure out things and start putting it together, because that's a nice soft schedule right there, the nice soft part with Giants, Jets, and Potato Skins. And LLL, three L's on those occasions. Like, I did not see that coming at all.
And they damn near lost to New England. That they could have been 0-4 in that stretch. They could be sitting at 2-5. I tweeted it out. I said, you know, Packers get embarrassed tomorrow, I'd be listening to some offers.
Yeah.
On Rodgers. I mean, because you're going to be shit with him. You might as well get something before he's going to up and walk or just up and retire on you at the end of this season. Because I think if this thing goes, like, horribly south, if this is 6-11 bad, he might just, you know, be done with it.
I understand that, but I guess I feel like that's sort of like a Joe Montana to the Chiefs type situation. Like, you don't want to take someone that's so obviously a team legend and just dispose of him at the end, because you're going to create harsh feelings on his end, especially with someone as sensitive and as much of a diva as Karen Rodgers is. And you don't want to send a message to any other players that, hey, no matter how legendary you are and how many titles you win for us, and you only won the one, but that's one more than anyone on the Bears. No matter what you do for us, if it turns sour at the end, we're just going to ship your ass out. I don't think you want to send that message to anybody, because now everybody will be looking at you like, okay, what do you think of me then if you're going to trade him? Ugh.
Now, on the flip side of that, if somehow, some way, they go out there tomorrow and they beat Buffalo and they get to 4-4, they absolutely need to go and make some kind of a splash. And there are wide receivers available. Go get one. Swallow your pride. Buy someone who's not AJ Green. You know,
the same organization
ever. Right. But do it. Because if you get back to 4-4, maybe you got a shot. But yeah, you go to 3-5 and you just get destroyed by Buffalo. Not looking good. It's over.
The organization that refuses to draft a wide receiver in the first round,
yeah,
or refuses to actually go get the talent that's out there in the draft, do you think they're going to trade for one? I don't see that happening either.
I'm saying, if they beat Buffalo, you'd better get all in.
They got issues on the other side of the ball, too, not just the run defense. That game, believe it or not, was actually won by Beerman to Terry McLaurin beating Jair Alexander several times.
That was a great bailout throw and catch. I mean, it was a nice run back where McLaurin ran back to the ball, and, you know, Heinicke was under pressure. And, yeah, he winged it out there, and because that was a third down stop. Packers get the ball back, only needing a field goal to win the game. And they had had the momentum because they had just scored the touchdown to cut it down. And then, boom, we got them in a third down. It's decent distance, great for the defense. And, you know, Heineken gets away from the rush. And, yeah, he winged that out there and just barely got it into McLaurin, but he got it in there.
Yeah, I don't want to make excuses for Mr. Rodgers, but if you're going to have bad run D and your top corner is going to give up plays to close the game out, like, what are you going to do? Like, there's kind of nowhere else to go. And that about the Benny Hill play at the end, that was closer
that was
to working than it probably should have been.
Yeah, several times. And then one of the final throws, though, ended up going forward.
Right.
So I know that would have, yeah, because they called that. And but the play was over anyways, but they did call that. But, yeah, it moved its way down the field. That's for sure.
They matriculated. They matriculated.
Once Rodgers got it back, I thought he was going to just gun that thing all the way to the other sideline and someone was going to have a Kenyon Drake lane, you know?
He tried to. Unfortunately, there was an offensive lineman there, John Runyon, and he hits the E6. Ball goes right through his legs. And Tampa and Tommy, you know, we get emotions flowing for the second week in a row in the NFL as Carolina pulls out that win over Tampa Bay. We had Kayvon Thibodeau crying the week before with the Giants.
Yeah.
And this week we get Steve Wilkes. They give him the game ball in the locker room, and he starts breaking up and crying. He's from Charlotte. It was a big emotional day for him. So that was their Super Bowl, clearly. I'm sure Tommy was doing some crying privately, realizing that he threw away his marriage in order to lose to the fucking Carolina Panthers. Panther, you lost to the Panthers. Okay, your letdown of the week.
Boy, you know, I'm so sick of the Giants. I'm giving it to the Jags. Coming up 1 yard short. Of beating the Giants, you know, basically you've got Christian Kirk pulling his best Plaxico Burris or Dyson, you know, Kevin Dyson, basically getting Mike Davis right.
The Mike Jones, Kevin Dyson.
Mike Jones, right down there at the goal line. But that, oh my God, it was like he will himself. Although I think that was like two dudes hauling him down, not just one, but. Just get 1 yard deeper on your route. I'm so sick of the Giants. They're bad.
They're 6-1, baby. Jesus.
All right. Tell me a worse 6-1 or this many wins this late. This Giants team or that Pittsburgh run that we went on a few seasons ago where we knew that they were complete frauds?
That Steelers run was progressively worse each and every week as it went on. They started out pretty good, and then every week was just another piece kind of falling off. Like, oh, how are they holding on? How do they keep winning? We knew that was going to end eventually. I don't know if the Giants ever started off real strong. It started off in that win in Nashville, which was fine, but that didn't, it didn't make me think they were going to be 6-1. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
That was the it was a game of inches that game. The Jags, they're up 17-13. They pass on a 38-yard field goal and go for it on 4th and inches. And Trevor Lawrence can't make the stretch. So the game of inches right there at that point.
Yeah.
But then the last throw when the Jags are down 23-17 is caught at the 1 by Christian Kirk. And as you said, he got stopped. Mike Jones, Kevin Dyson. That was. Like, Fabian Moreau made the initial hit and held him up so that other people could rally and bring him out. So it wasn't quite a one-on-one dropping at the one, but it was close. It was very close, very reminiscent of that Super Bowl play between the Titans and the Rams.
Yeah. That's why I brought up the Plaxico Burris one in that Atlanta tie where he got tackled at the half-yard line. Very similar there because there's not that many games where you have the guy who gets tackled like within reaching distance of the ball. Like, couldn't either get the body turned right or get the arm extended. They did a good job. They stacked them up. I mean, give credit to the Giants defense there. They stopped them.
They did.
But, God, so done with this Giants team.
Can you give them credit for at least one thing? It's hard to beat a team whose quarterback throws for 200 and runs for another 100. There's Danny Dimes again with the junior project stuff. I was joking about it, but man, they're hitting on something at least right now.
Well, it's easy to do that when you've got Saquon Barkley at full strength.
That's a very, very key piece, yes. But come on, you got him running for 100, and then the quarterback's going to run for 100? That's very hard to beat.
So what let you down?
Fucking Dolphin Tua. What the hell?
You talking about the second half of that game?
They started so well.
They did. They looked fast and unstoppable.
And they just stopped. They stopped themselves. They didn't stop themselves. I'm being very unfair. The Steelers adjusted and took away all those deep middle throws and made Tua have to look sideline and look for shorter targets. And maybe he'll be much better at adjusting to the adjustment later in the season. But this first game back, he wasn't able to do it. And the Dolphins barely hang on and win that game, but they don't cover. So that was a letdown. And then it was a letdown on the other end because, as I said, I'm – was using Tua as my fantasy quarterback for the 1 week that I didn't have Josh Allen available. And Tua starts out so hot, I'm thinking, I'm going to win. I'm in how many points was that? So I guess I wasn't feeling that great because I think I was down like 20 or 21 going into the Sunday night game. But
sure.
He starts so hot on that first drive, touchdown and getting the yardage. He got a lot of points in that first drive, and I'm extrapolating that out going, oh, I'm going to get this easily. Nope, lost the game by 4. So that was a big letdown. Tua, what? They started hot, but they really cooled off.
I sweated that.
Yeah.
Because that stayed just under the number, and then it just every time you'd watch one of them start getting a little closer – they'd have to punt, or the Steelers would get into field goal range, and they'd either pass it up or they'd get holding calls. I think at one point they got from field goal range to like a 3rd and 36.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous.
Yeah, I remember that. But again, the Dolphins' offense looking so much more potent when Tua is running it, much more than at any point when Teddy Bridgewater was running it. Much more than at any point when the other guy behind Bridgewater, whose name I don't remember, was running it.
Skylar Thompson?
There you go.
Random Allen.
Dude. Some guy. They still look much better with Tua than without, but he wasn't able to figure it out in the second half. McDaniel didn't take an easy field goal at one point, and that –
yep.
Of course, winds up mattering as far as the point spread goes. So there we go once again with that's another trend. I'm with the metrics guys who say that it's a better chance to win the game if you don't take the field goal and you just go for it and keep going. But to your point, you leave yourself open for criticism when you go for it and you don't get it. And now, you know, the Dolphins hung on and won the game, but they didn't cover the numbers, so it cost me there for sure. But there's a lot of people not going for field goals.
It really sucks, doesn't it? Completely correctly assessing a game and losing the pick.
I'm just saying, it
happens to me all the time.
All right, what was your smartest of week 7?
I'm liking the 2 trades this week. I don't think Roquan Smith liked it, but I'm liking that James Robinson to the Jets. The Jags are clearly probably not going to make the playoffs, even though I tried. They looked so good early, but James Robinson, they get some draft capital from the Jets for a guy who they clearly, this ownership or, you know, this coach, they're just not clearly invested in the undrafted free agent who's just been nothing but productive for them. So they ship him off to the Jets for some draft capital, and then the Bears, coming right off of beating the Patriots, decide that they need to start clearing up some money so that they can eventually re-sign Roquan Smith and trade Robert Quinn to the Eagles. Let's just make the Eagles even better. Let's make the undefeated Eagles even better, and let's make the Bears' best defensive player cry. But smart moves, smart moves by those two teams. The Jets clearly needed an upgrade at running back. Michael Carter's not the answer after Breece Hall tore his ACL. So James Robinson is a great he'll slide right in. Great move by the Jets, who look like contenders, you know. At least they have the record of a contender, so sometimes that's all it takes. And then the Eagles just loaded up even more. So those are my smartest of the week. I love this later trade deadline.
Yeah, and not just a later deadline, but more younger GMs are coming in with more risk-taking and less risk-averse. This is definitely not something you would see 10, 15, 20 years ago, certainly not when we were children. These trades right before the deadline. That's definitely been a sort of a hallmark of baseball and basketball more recently. But now the NFL getting into it, and I agree that both those trades are smart. I agree that Chicago getting rid of another aging veteran and getting something for him is smart. It's just like the Khalil Mack deal. Is not that the guy is bad at football. It's that
when
you're good and contending, by the time that happens, they'll be dead. They'll be retired and out of the league. So absolutely get something for them. Now, there's no way in hell the Bears are going to be contending anytime, in the next 3 years or so, the way that Justin Fields is developing. Although, looking at last week, maybe he's developing quicker than we think. I'm just happy that they use a game plan that actually used his strengths. That makes Eberflus better than Nagy by a mile already, just for doing that. My smartest of the week, I'm going to specifically point out the Chiefs now, what you gave your best. I talked about them using their speed as part of a bunch of teams that have such great speed and put it to good use, specifically the Chiefs, because the Niners had juice from the jump. They welcomed Christian McCaffrey. They're feeling good. The crowd's going crazy. Pat Mahomes stokes the fire there in Santa Clara, throwing an INT. Jimmy G turns it into a touchdown. Sky Moore muffs a punt to end the first half. That should have pushed the Chiefs down even further. They were already trailing, but Jimmy G threw up a panicked end zone INT to give the Chiefs a respite. And they go in the locker room and say, "Whoo, that was close. We could have really been down. We could have been really looking bad here. What do we do in the second half? I know. Let's go back to our basics. Let's take advantage of our speed. Let's utilize." It really reminded me of Super Bowl 54 against the 49ers. Hey, what do we do best? Let's use our speed and take advantage and go downfield and do what we got to do to win this game, because we're not going to win it the way we're playing right now. And meanwhile, we saw the duality of Jimmy Garoppolo. He had some good plays, and then he had some plays where, oh, no, what was that? Why did you do that? It's the same thing. So, some things never change. The Chiefs need to do their best to use their speed and play smart in that respect. The 49ers need to do their best to hide the fact that they don't trust their quarterback, and with good reason, because he can do some really stupid things on the field. I said I was scared of Pat sort of chucking it up and taking control of this game after that big loss against the Bills, and just saying, fuck it, let's, why are we going to play careful and come up losers anyway? Let's just go out the way we're supposed to go out and throw it up. And that's kind of how you saw it playing out. And I took the Niners, but I was afraid of Pat doing exactly what he did, just going out there and saying, hell with it, let's just go bombs away. And
boy, howdy.
Bombs away they went, so good on them.
Yeah, they were impressive. They can be when they try.
Yeah, I wish they would apply that even more. What was the dumbest of the week for you?
Oh, the stupidest of the week. You tell you what, I might not get too many more opportunities if the stars align the way I say they're going to pile on my favorite head coach, Nathaniel Hackett, and the Denver Broncos, because I have been for multiple weeks now calling his firing, saying he's not flying back from London after tomorrow. But what a time once you lose your, 240 million dollar quarterback, and now you have to start Brett Rippin, Random Allen. That's not Mark Rippin. Yeah. That's for sure. That's a hell of a time to have your most pass attempts for the season. Just what a great game plan in a game that you lose 16-9.
Yeah.
you decide now's the time to unleash your passing off. Oh, this, I'm so done with this guy and this team. I'm done. They're dead to me.
Oh, those Broncos. Yeah. And all of that passing resulting in a whole lot of yardage. Oh, 225. Okay, never mind.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that's
just, ugh. That's nauseating. That yards per, oh, the yards per attempt is just pathetic.
My dumbest,
that's what you come up with.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know.
4.9 yards per attempt, which was actually the higher of the two quarterbacks in that game. Ooh.
Yeah, we don't. We want to talk about Zach Wilson right now.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's all the Broncos have right now.
Yeah.
That's about all they can do. You know, they lost their best running back. They certainly
they
don't
did.
Trust the guy that's left behind. That's kind of the only respite that they have, apparently. Didn't work out for them, clearly. My dumbest of the week was I was taking a look at that Bengals-Falcons game for a little while, and they both were playing to their strengths, which is why Cincinnati had four touchdowns in the first half, and I didn't really watch much of the second. The dumbest to me is Art Smith, hey, you can throw the ball to try to come back, you know.
It's okay.
You can do it. It's okay.
Yeah.
The Falcons responded to being down that big by staying committed to the run. There was a 75-yard touchdown throw from Marcus Mariota to Jameer Burr, but that was like a two-minute drill type of deal where we're going to throw to start the two-minute drill, and he just happened to get wide open and go all the way. They certainly weren't trying to throw. They really didn't want to throw. You're down that much, and you come up with 13 pass attempts for the whole game? 13? The hell? I was like, I'm watching that. I'm like, you can throw. You can throw the ball to try to come back. At least try to come back by throwing the ball. I was, you know, I make fun of him. He's got a lot of experience hiding his quarterback being down here in Tennessee. But at some point, you gotta let it go. You gotta, when you're down that many scores, 3-4 touchdowns, and there's, you know, you're not going to make that up by running the football. You might with Derrick Henry. You don't have Derrick Henry, so you're going to have to do something different.
I can't argue with that. I mean they lost on who they really were. I mean, they stayed true to themselves. I guess there's something to be said for that. I mean, they must have just known, like, oh, our goose is cooked. We're not coming back from this. Might as well not make it worse. But, yeah,
they are who we thought they were.
13 pass attempts in a game that they lost by 18.
And we're down a lot. You know, it looked a lot worse than that.
They were down 28-17 at the half, so I could understand only down, you know, 11 in the second half. But at some point, you gotta get back in this game. They another team that got shut out in the second half.
Yeah. But they didn't try. They didn't even try to.
Right. That's so, which is so weird for a team, you know, that they were definitely, we both picked against them. We said they couldn't cover every spread. So now they're 6-1 against the spread.
But we were right.
Yeah. This is just, the Bengals seem to have shaken off the cobwebs.
Yeah, but they got a test now with the big injury.
Yeah. And you still know who they are. You know, they can't protect Joe Burrow. They still have a decent passing game even without Jamar Chase, but we'll see if T. Higgins is the number one. We'll see what Tyler Boyd can do. Right.
Yeah.
All those guys move up a slot. And so we'll see. Everybody says, T. Higgins would be a number one on every other team. Well, now he's got to be a number one on his own team. So
we'll find out. All right. Danielle is all queued up and ready.
Well,
was your
first,
what the fuck?
First I have to do my struggling.
Okay.
That's what I usually do that before I do. I always save my WTFs for the last. But no, I'm going to say.
Struggling.
Andy Dalton, man.
Mm.
Thursday nights. Threw six touchdowns. Unfortunately, Unfortunately, you threw two of those to the other team in the span of a minute.
Yeah, back to back.
You know, in a game that they were clearly the better team. They should have won. They were. They were the better team. I mean, I'm not bitter because I just – not only because I lost that pick, but the Saints were clearly doing everything to Arizona that you should do to Arizona. They could throw on them. They were running. They were better than the Cardinals, except for – here it is, Thursday night Andy comes back. And I don't know what it is with Andy Dalton and Thursday nights, but, yeah, it was, if you actually factor in that – they gave up a touchdown before he started throwing the pick sixes. Arizona scored 21 points in a minute and 35 seconds.
Yeah, because they were looking so shitty. It was like, what is going on with this team? Like, there's so much growth that still needs to occur between Kyler Murray and Cliff Kingsbury. They do not look like they're on the same page at all. Like, that doesn't look anything like a quarterback that an organization would commit complete buckets of money and long-term years to, but they just did. They just did. But then they undermined the kid by saying, oh, by the way, we need a provision in your contract to make sure that you actually study and get ready for these games. So they
that's
already
like Call of Duty.
They already let
Kyler got
know
the bag before Lamar got the bag.
Yeah, that's criminal right there.
You know, and Lamar's best evidence for deserving it was actually this Thursday night game, because he lost Mark Andrews. He lost his best player on offense and actually looked like a better thrower.
Yeah, but he has those games like that sometimes.
Yeah, but he lost his safety blanket, and I think it forced him to not, you know, sometimes that actually helps you. I thought that's what would happen with the Packers. It didn't. But yeah,
one could argue that he just made up and found another safety blanket and just filled in Isaiah Likely, because that's kind of what.
Well,
it was like.
We were talking about Isaiah Likely leading into the season based off of that huge preseason that he had, and it turns out he's a real one too.
It sure looks like it.
So, who's struggling for you?
The Saints did definitely look like the better team on that Thursday night. I picked the Cardinals, and I'm telling you, they should have lost that game.
I told you, so it sucks, right? It sucks knowing that you should have won that pick and losing.
Despite Thursday night, Lamar was struggling to me because of the Sunday.
Struggling.
9 of 16 for a 120 and 3 sacks. Like, Baltimore, I don't know how they won that game.
They completely had that game covered until Justice Hill decided to just cough it up in, like, his own red zone.
Yeah, but I understand that. But the quarterback playing that bad,
yeah,
you usually don't see a team, you know, competing or contending when their quarterback is playing as shitty as Lamar was playing. The pumpkin is turning into a coach. I called it a few weeks ago. It just looked like he was getting a little worse and a little worse every week. And frankly, he didn't start out that hot on Thursday, but turned it around. That Sunday game against the Browns, they let the Browns rally back really for the cover, but not the W. So that's progress. At least they didn't blow the entire lead and lose the game. So at least they did that much. Cleveland had the comeback win on an Amari Cooper touchdown, but he got ruled for offensive pass interference, and that took that all the way. So they really could have and should have lost that game too, because that call was kind of sketchy. But yeah, Lamar didn't look like anything. That I don't know what's going on with him, but he didn't look any good Sunday. And then like we were saying, Thursday night, he looked like he found the magic formula, but it took a while. He did not start off very well. And I don't know if he overcame and found a way to adjust, or if he just kind of filling in with another safety blanket and you take Mark Andrews down and put Isaiah Likely up, and he wound up giving it to Likely a lot of probably the same amount of time that he would have tried to give it to Mark Andrews. So.
Yeah, he's clearly comfortable throwing to big dudes close to the line of scrimmage who are right in front of him.
Mm-hmm. That's a thing for him. That's for sure.
Which is sometimes you see that with the guy who's got the tendency to you know, run.
Yeah.
You've got to be in his vision. Especially if he's not, you know, thinking about running with that aim to throw the ball down the field to throw the kill shot. So he needs that guy who's pretty much like obviously in his vision.
And that's a big problem. And you kind of see why the Ravens don't want to necessarily commit long-term. Because do you want to commit long-term to a quarterback who doesn't appear to be able to quarterback your team if he doesn't see everything directly in front of him like that? Like that,
I don't have a problem committing to the guy. I think they have a problem committing to him for what it's probably going to cost.
For what he wants.
Right.
For what he's worth.
Not giving him Mahomes money or Rodgers money. No. He's good. I'm not even giving – I don't know. Maybe Dak money. Right. These guys all get these ridiculous contracts.
I was about to say Kyler money. Would you give him Kyler money?
Yeah. Or Russ money. But you're saddled with them. And I don't know if the Ravens are looking at Lamar going, oh, we want another 6 years of this.
Right. Yeah, I as much as I love Lamar, I love watching him play. Yeah, I'm with him. I'm not sure if I want to do that either.
Right, like you look at the progression, like look at him and look at Josh Allen, right?
Well, that's not fair.
I'm just saying you're seeing progression.
Whereas
Lamar, I don't think you see regression. You just it's the same guy that he's been for 4 or 5 years. Yeah, he's the same.
And that's why I was wondering going into the season, not just him, but the coordinator, Greg Olsen, too. Like, y'all got to come up with something else because this ain't working.
And, right. Wait till it comes time to pay project.
Oh, baby. Yeah.
Oh, man. That's going to be a good one.
All right. Now you can cue up Danielle.
Yeah. Yeah. Lay it on me. Give it to me.
Okay. There you go.
Oh. Winning the game 72-71.
I'll tell you what, this one just made me say, not even that, but like, what the fuck, man? What the fuck is up with teams that decide that they're going to make a quarterback change, but they're going to also make the quarterback change and commit to the guy for the rest of the season?
Hmm.
Why would you ever telegraph that? I understand Matt Ryan's a bum who's had one good game where he harkened back to his glory years, but he's also hurt. You're just all of a sudden going to go, yeah, we've seen enough. We're making Sam Ellinger our starting. And now that's it. You're our quarterback for the rest of the year. Come on. And then after that Thursday night thing with Andy Dalton, apparently Dennis Allen has seen enough. Andy Dalton is now our starter for the rest of the year. Like, God, what the fuck? What are you doing? Because first of all, either you're going to stick to that or one of those guys is going to play so awful or both that you're going to have to make the change again. And then you just look like an idiot. Just announce who your starting quarterback is and shut up.
This is our guy going forward.
Or, you know, we feel like this. He gives us the best chance to win this week or whatever. Neither one of these guys deserve that kind of a commitment. They don't owe it to Fred McGriff.
They don't owe it to the veteran. Ellinger's not even the veteran, so, yeah.
No, he's a sixth-round rookie. Oh, boy.
Yeah,
I don't know,
what,
that, I don't know what's up with coaches there's doing that. Okay. I don't know what's up with a lot of coaches this year. Oy.
Yeah, I don't quite understand either. My issue with that was it's not just, it was a couple of games that Matt Ryan had where he – look like, oh, wow, okay, there's the old Matty Ice.
Okay. Then he had that one where he just was like, holy shit, this is MVP Matt Ryan.
And then there's this game where, oh, there's the Matt Ints we were expecting.
Yeah.
And two ints in the first half.
Yeah.
Andrew Adams picked six for the Titans. So, yeah, that's enough at the end of the game. Got to get him out of here. Got to be done with him. I don't understand it either. I kind of feel for Frank Reich. Like, how many quarterbacks is he going to go through?
Maybe the Colts should have a strategy other than reclamation projects for quarterbacks. You know, I mean, ever since Andrew Luck, it hasn't been good. And these last three, Philip Rivers, the corpse of Philip Rivers, who actually he got him to the playoffs. I'll give him that.
Yeah, he was fine.
Carson Wentz.
Man, that was a mistake.
And now Matt Ryan. It's not working. Stop with these, you know, Methuselah quarterbacks and actually just go get yourself somebody, not a sixth round draft pick.
Yeah.
Actually, go get yourself somebody. Because after that very clean game that Matt Ryan had, he got sacked three times, threw two picks. He's right back to being the Matt Ryan that led the league in all of those bad stats that we talked about 2 weeks ago.
The show will have to be very briefly interrupted. My wife was flying home, and she is up front now, so I will be right back.
Okay. Well, yeah, so Matt Ryan, I get he's a bum. You don't do that to the veteran. You go out, you sign the guy, you think this guy's got the best chance. You signed him. So you've got to – you don't have to play him, but you don't also have to either hide his injury with the benching and say that it's a performance issue if he's clearly hurt. But don't go and say that, we believe in this guy who we drafted in the sixth round that he's now going to be the starter for the rest of the season. Really, you don't do that. Waiting to hear Dre when he gets back, because I'm curious what his Danielle Sargent moment was in a week that was full of them. I mean, we talked about a lot of them. This whole week was WTF. It was just one after the next every game. This is an interesting week coming up, too, because we don't have any major games here featuring teams with winning records. The primetime game that everybody was going to have to see was that Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers game on Sunday night, and that looks like that looks like it could be ugly. That game might be over early. I hope it's not. I'd like to see a competitive game. You'd like to see Green Bay not be awful. You know, the league probably doesn't want Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers to be terrible. It's like they don't want Brady and the Bucks to be terrible, but this is what they've got. They're going to have to start to embrace some of these new up-and-coming teams. We need to definitely feeling like a new blood kind of season, a transitional season where you're starting to see some of that old guard kind of break down and fall. And we go through this, otherwise we'd still be watching Joe Montana and Dan Marino out there playing football. Thank God we're not. Although the way Tom Brady's sticking around, it feels like we're due for 10 more years of this. He doesn't even have to worry about the home life anymore. He can just play football now till he's 50. But I really hope that's not the case. I think we've all been done with that for a while.
60 or 70.
Man, I was so happy when he retired. And then he unretired. It's like, fuck.
Yep. Came back for this.
Kind of, although we said that this is what's happening to them.
Yeah, it's weird and kind of hilarious all at the same time, honestly.
Yeah. A little macabre, but, you know, hey.
That's what my wife says. Hi.
Hello.
And I didn't get my...
What the game, 72-71.
The Bears. I mean, hats off to Justin Fields for staying poised during the beatification of Bailey Zappe there, and I'm guilty as well. I texted you when they put him in. I was like, yeah, here we go, Bailey Zappe. And eventually the wheels fell off of that. The Bears D put the kid back in his place, and then your bear whispering came through, and the Bears took over. But just they look so in control all of a sudden. Chicago actually looked like they knew what to do with Justin Fields. Like for the first time almost ever, the Bears looked like they knew what they had in that quarterback, and used his legs and used his speed and used his football instinct and let him actually make plays out there. I don't know why it took so long. I don't know why they decided to do it in this game, but that was kind of my what the fuck. I'm watching that, I'm a Bears fan, so I'm sitting there watching it, halfway cheering and like, all right, we're finally going to use this kid and see what we got. But the other half of me, having picked New England to win and cover and watching the Bears go over 33-14, I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah. the other part of you cursing my name for bear whispering again.
That and Kaz and Renard are trying to assess our opinions and whatnot, and you immediately chime in on Twitter. Yeah, Bears are going to win and cover. The Bear Whisperer has spoken, and I'm going back and forth with Kaz, and I'm like, this is Matt Eberflus versus Bill Belichick. It's going to be disgusting. It's going to be a complete. There's no contest. And then that happened. Like, what the fuck? Okay.
Well, I called my shot.
You did. You sure did.
But I didn't even say I'm taking the point. I said they're covering and winning.
And they're going to win. And you absolutely called that.
And they ran for 243 yards. Let's not forget that.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't just Fields. It was a team effort.
I mean, he did lead the team in rushing, but he had 82 right. out of 243 yards.
Yeah. We both tried to call some shots there. We both tried to balance our leg on one chair and set a stand on the other. I took Indy plus 2 against...
that did not work.
Against the Titans, that did not quite work out. And you said you would have taken the Cleveland Browns plus 7, but the spread was 6.5. So you took the Ravens.
I've been just splitting hairs. We did it last night. I'm like, oh, man, you're screwing me on these lines, which we still have to talk about, but that's, we'll table that for down the road. And it didn't matter either way.
Right, as it turned out. All right. We get in everything we wanted to get in about week 7?
Yeah, I think we talked about every single game. You did, yeah, you briefly mentioned the Raiders. There's nothing much to talk about there. I want to ask about how's that Davis Mills fan club going?
The jersey is kind of getting tattered and torn up. Hey, it went for 302. I mean, there's that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the Raiders. They don't stop anybody.
I know. So same as always. Same as before the season began. Like, there's flashes, but got to see more. Want to see more. Basically, we haven't changed. The train is still in the station for Mr. Mills. So.
Yeah, well, they're so bad. This might be his one and only shot.
We'll see this week. What happens when the Titans come calling?
This week, I just mean this season.
That's what I wanted. It was one season.
Yeah,
one season. Let's give them a fair shot. So we'll see how that all works out.
But even with the new format, we still hit a little bit on every game.
Yeah, we definitely have something to get in about everything. So with that, we will move on to make our Week 8 picks. We'll do that in a couple of minutes. You are listening live to In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Not on the radio, but only here on the website, blogtalkradio.com/InMuchLessDetail. To be notified when we're live, you can follow the show on the Blog Talk Radio website. Or you can follow my Twitter feed at @IMLDDre when I tweet out when we're live before every show. Jason's on Twitter too. His feed is at @IMLDJTG. Our show is available as a podcast where you can get the live show and a special VIP after show. To listen to the show as a podcast about an hour or so after the live show is over, come back to the show page and go through our archives, or subscribe on iTunes or any number of different podcasting apps, including Player.fm, Mixcloud, Blueberry, and the TuneIn Radio app. You'll get the whole show, the live show and the after show, downloaded straight to you. You can always send us a question or comment or shout out via email to the following email address, inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can follow all of our picks on our blog. The website for the blog is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Our Thursday night picks will be available Thursday afternoon on our Twitter feeds. Again, that's @IMLDDre and @IMLDJTG. This copyrighted broadcast is a production of Jay and Me and is solely performed for our entertainment, as well as for any poor soul who happens to be listening. It is intended to be a football pick show for the private, non-commercial use of our audience. Any publication, reproduction, retransmission, or any other use of the descriptions and accounts of this podcast without the express written consent of Jay or me is strictly prohibited. 14 games left to pick on the docket for week 8 after our Thursday night victory with the Ravens. To start the week off, two teams on bye, the Chiefs and the Chargers. And once again, a week where I don't know what to make of this, but again, there's only, just like last week, there's only one game on the entire schedule in which both teams have winning records. So as tough as last week was, got to do it all over again. So how do you feel about this week's fix?
I don't know from week to week anymore. I mean, 7-7 last week shouldn't feel great, but hey, it's not 5-9.
Exactly. I would take 7-7.
I'll take it. You know, it gets me, what, 5 back now? So.
That's right. You're at 54-53. I'm at 59-48.
And we both started off with a win. It always feels better.
Always great.
You've always got that. You've got one.
That's right.
You got one out of the way. And not one of us isn't playing catch up on the other one, or we both just outright take an L to start the week. So yeah, hey, 1-0. We both feel like geniuses. We're undefeated for week 8.
We never lose on Thursday nights in week 8 in 2022. We will start tomorrow morning with our final London game of the season at Wembley Stadium. This will not be something you can watch on TV. This is just like the Thursday night Amazon package. You can only watch this one streaming. This is on ESPN Plus, which I do not have. So
I'll have to
keep up with that during the pregame shows around the league. But it's the Broncos and the Jaguars, your favorite coach, Nathaniel Hackett, our favorite quarterback, Russell Wilson, doing the whole Tybo exercise plan up and down the aisle of the plane, getting himself ready, getting his high knees all worked up. He's going to be ready to go. You're on the clock. You're on the record. You called this weeks ago. Nate Hackett does not fly back with the team. He stays in England and gets fired after this game. We'll see if that actually works out. For the Jags, all about Travis Etienne and running back now that they've shipped James Robinson off. But he's looked very good, so they should have a good one on their hands there. Both teams 2-5 entering this one. Jags are the slight favorite, -2.5 against the Broncos.
Yeah, and Etienne brings them more in the passing game too. So I know that, so that gives them a little bit of an added dimension there. Admittedly, the Broncos still play great defense, but I called this shot now going back to that debacle in the first few, every week is a debacle with the Broncos. I'm getting this coach fired. I got to take the Jags. I'm not locking it up, but I got to, I know it doesn't matter with the locks at this point, but you know, he's probably, if he stays behind, you know, give him a few weeks, he could be the new prime minister over there. They're going through him like crazy. He could, Nathaniel Hackett could ruin England too. The way he's ruined this franchise, this was supposed to be like the season, right? I mean, I wished when the Broncos traded for Russell Wilson that I should have just gone and found a sports book and faded them so hard not to make the playoffs, because I'm on record. They were, yeah, even when they made the trade, I'm like, oh yeah, well, enjoy your last place finish.
Yeah.
Because it's not a great team. I mean, it's a good defense, and they were just, they're surrounded by so much talent in that division, it was just doomed to fail. But they're not even doing anything against, like, the teams that they should play well against. They just got somewhat embarrassed by the Jets, who did not play a great game. The Broncos held them to 16, couldn't win. It's just crazy. The Broncos, they're holding these teams under 20 pretty much every week, except, I believe, for that one game against the Raiders, where they've been able to hold teams and keep them under to very respectable defensive numbers. They're one of the top-ranked pass defenses. They're so good defensively. That's what makes it so maddening, is what an idiot that coach is. So I'm taking the Jags. And they're gonna, and then Nathaniel Hackett gets fired during the bye week. It's got to happen. Make it happen.
You're trying to talk it up. You're trying to talk it into existence like I've never heard before. So you're really trying to make that happen.
I'm going to be so disappointed if he's their coach in 2 weeks.
Like I said, the template for our coach is so terrible, we need to shit can him before he even gets through the first half of a year.
Yes.
Was set last year with Urban Meyer, and as terrible as Nate Hackett has been, he's not Urban Meyer, is he?
No, Urban Meyer was a bad off-the-field guy. Nathaniel Hackett, for what I've seen through 7 weeks, is one of the worst in-game play callers and everything. He does nothing right. The Broncos, I mean, throw the stat out here. I know you don't. The Broncos have scored the least amount of points in football right now. The two teams in front of them have played another, like, one less game than them.
The Broncos' offense is bad. Yes, got it. Understood.
Oh, 100 points in 7 weeks.
I guess I feel like there's been so much, like, miscommunication on the field, so many missed targets, that there's still plausibility that the offense will improve and maybe greatly as the season goes on, as Russell Wilson and these guys get more familiar with each other. Maybe I'm looking at it through rose-colored glasses as a Russell Wilson fan, but I still think they got room to grow, and I understand that Nate Hackett has been bad at play calling and bad at organization, but I just don't think he's been bad enough to get rid of him before his first year is even over. At least the Broncos won't get the home fans booing in England and counting down the play clock for them, so that's good. But here's another stat for you. Why do they have 110 penalties already? It's week 8. Why do you have that many? I'm taking the Jags with you. I'm not locking it either, but I don't have any reason
and
to take the
Broncos. How many of those are pre-snap penalties on offense? It's bad. Delay
another
of
false
game.
Start.
False start, delay of game. No, I'm telling you, the fans walked out.
Overtime? Oh, hell no, we're not watching this.
Yeah, I'm going home.
Hell no.
I don't even
want to
watch this
anymore.
For free.
Let's go back to America for the early Sunday slate. Let's go down to the Dirty Dirty. And the Panthers and the Falcons, Carolina now 2-5 after that surprise upset victory last week. And the Falcons are 3-4, but 6-1 against the spread, as you pointed out. Your guy Hubba Bubba lasted 1 week, and then he hurt his ankle, so he will not play for the Panthers. For the Falcons, they got cornerback issues. A.J. Terrell is out. He joins Casey Hayward, who's already on injured reserve, so they have issues there. With that, the Panthers are still the underdog. They are +4 at the Falcons.
This actually feels like one of those games that, you know, Arthur Smith, with that, you know, the commitment to what they do might actually work. This feels like it would be the right spot for a lot of Tyler Allgeier and Caleb Huntley and Mariota running the ball and Mariota kind of sprinkling in a few passes. The Panthers, despite beating whatever the corpse is of the Bucks last week, you know, I you got to discount that right now because they're just such a mess. I actually think Atlanta, they've acquitted themselves pretty well, even though they're not the most massively talented team, but I still think they're 4 points better than the Panthers here. I think it's going to be really close to this number because I don't think Atlanta really has that blowout potential, although they handled the Niners pretty easily the last time in their own building. I think they can handle the Panthers.
You'd think. I don't know how much of that was the time zone. The Falcon, I think that was a really bad matchup for the 49ers. For some reason, they just were not equipped to handle the Falcons there. I'm taking the Falcons as well because that was Carolina's no one believed in us moment. That was it. Everybody thought we were going to lose the Tampa.
Yeah, now they're like, we bad. Uh-oh.
Uh-huh. They're not doing that shit again. No, sorry. This is the Art Smith call more than 16 throws challenge. Hey, call more than 16 throws in a game and see what happens. You might actually win and look pretty good in doing it. Trust your quarterback. The Falcons are averaging 7.9 yards per throw. Throw the ball.
I didn't remember Marcus Mariota as being completely ass as a thrower of the football. I don't get it.
He wasn't great. He had some of those Tannehill-like throws, like, oh, my God, why did you do that? But he wasn't this, where you got to completely hide him and only let him throw 10 times. That's a little over.
Pass catchers.
Yeah.
He's got a top-tier receiver and a top-tier tight end. Use him.
Try him out. You drafted a receiver in the first round, throw it to him more than once.
What, one all for right. nine? That's not a great stat line for your number one draft pick?
Not to me. Maybe someone else thinks it is. The Cardinals and the Vikings, Arizona now 3-4, and Minnesota coming off their bye, 5-1. In this one, maybe Terminator is down. James Conner has bad ribs. He will not play. And Darrell Williams is a game-time decision with a knee injury. So they got running back issues in Arizona. Looks like another Eno Benjamin. I remember the Eno. I forgot the last name for a second there. Cardinals are the dogs plus 3.5 at the Vikings.
Yeah, I got to give the Vikings this one. I'm going to give the points. Arizona's defense is so bad. I really don't want to see – this is like the hide the children. This could be that ugly because this is Kirk Cousins throwing that to Justin Jefferson and Thielen and Irv Smith and Dalvin Cook. All these guys are coming off the bye, and they get to face that defense. Unless they come up with two more pick sixes in a 1 minute span, I mean, it's Kirk Cousins. Anything's possible. But yeah. I don't see that happening again. Now that's not to say because Minnesota's back end is pretty trash too. So maybe there's going to be some plays back there for Hopkins coming back. He looked really good. That was a 10 catches in his first game back. I mean, clearly that's the guy that Kyler Murray is going to lock onto. So I think that the Cardinals are going to be able to put up some points, but I think Minnesota is able to pull away and keep them away because they can run, they can throw. They're overall, I think, more equipped to handle this game, and they're well-rested.
Yeah, definitely well-rested. Kyler, like I said, continues to look like the least prepared quarterback every week. It looks like him and his coach just do not know what's going on. It looks like they're reading from books in different languages when they walk into the building together. They're so out of sync. I understand the wide receiver injuries, and I understand missing DeAndre Hopkins for the first six games. But even with that, someone with the creative mind of Cliff Kingsbury and the talent of Kyler Murray, number one overall pick, and they're producing a passing game that's averaging 5.9 yards per throw right now. That's awful. That's worse than the Jets and the Steelers, and it's terrible. And I don't know if that's going to turn around because it doesn't – you got to prepare in order to turn that around. You can't just keep winging it every game. And I don't want to be stereotypical, but it looks like Kyler Murray's going in there winging it every game. It really does look like he's unprepared. And that reflects on the coach as well, not just on Kyler. And the Vikings can certainly scheme around their terrible defense. And when you're going against an offense that's this toothless and this weak, I don't want to pump up the Vikings as some incredible monster, but again, this is a difficult week with all these games with losing records or 500 records. I don't know why the Vikings are only 3.5-point favorites, and they could win this by 3 touchdowns easily. I don't know why they wouldn't just blow the Cardinals out of the water. So I'm going to lock up the Vikings coming off their bye. Why not?
Hey, why not? It's going back to the well. You've locked them up once already. You locked them up against the Dolphins a few weeks ago.
And I know I can't lock them 2 weeks in a row. They were on bye last week, so I didn't have to worry about that.
Right. It's always good locking up a team coming off the bye when you can't lay out. Good move.
Damn right. I just had to check. Did I lock against the Cardinals? But I did not. On to the Raiders and the Saints. And this one down in the Superdome, Raiders 2-4, Saints 2-5. Both of those teams, I think, we're looking for much better records at this point than that. I think both teams have enough talent to be much better than that. Something's got to give. Raiders are 0-3 on the road so far this year. Saints are 0-3 at home at the Superdome. Something has got to get figured out there. Darren Waller may return from his hamstring for the Raiders. Look out for the inactives tomorrow for that. But they really might need him because Davante Adams apparently has the flu, and there's others on the injured list that also have illness. Whatever he's got, it looks like it's going around for the Raiders. So that might really be an issue. Saints have issues of their own. Once again, no Mike Thomas, no Jarvis Landry at the receiver position for Red Rifle. Cornerback issues, Bradley Roby is on IR with an ankle injury. Marshon Lattimore is still down. He's not going to play again with that abdominal injury. In this one, the Raiders find themselves a very slight road favorite, minus one at the Saints.
So what you're saying is you love the over here.
I do. I actually do.
I love the over on this one, too. This is even with the lack of weapons, and as much as we crapped on Andy Dalton for that performance on Thursday night, he still, minus that 1 minute stretch, played one hell of a game. I mean, he did move the ball. They've got Kamara back and healthy. He's in the mix. He's a big pass part of the passing game. They've got this thing going where they sprinkle in Taysom Tebow and get him in the mix, and it seems to be working for him. So, and the receivers guys have filled in okay. We had a Kevin White sighting last week, which was weird. I didn't know quite how to feel about that. I was like, I thought I didn't know he was still alive. It was like, holy shit, a Kevin White sighting. And then, you know, with Callaway and Traquan.
He's the next DeSean Jackson. He's going to have a 70-yard catch once a year for the next 10 years.
Yeah. And if he's Will Fuller, he does that and then blows his knee out.
Oh.
On that, right after the catch. You know, the Johnson, the tight end. So they're sprinkling in guys and getting them in there and scheming them up. So I don't think the Saints are going to have a problem scoring points in this game. I'm actually taking the Saints to win a shootout.
Yeah, Red Rifle's not on Thursday night. So he can actually play a full game and look pretty decent. He's got a chance to play well, at least.
He played 59 Jacob. Minutes, very, very 59 great minutes against the Cardinals.
Yeah. Josh Jacobs has been a dog, like not a dog player, but he's got that dog game. He's been killing it for the Raiders lately. And I think the Saints must focus. I think Dennis Allen has to know that, and he has to come in, focus on stopping Josh Jacobs because Devontae he's been iffy this year, even before this illness, and now he's going to come in trying to run past the flu. At the risk of getting burned by him, I think they should take the focus off the pass D for the Saints and try to focus in on the run and stopping the Raiders and making Derek Carr. Derek Carr can be the one very easily to make the really dumb passing mistakes and make the critical INT to lose the game late. I will concur with you and take the Saints as well.
Awful lot of agreement so far here.
Yeah, 4-for-4.
All right.
On to the Patriots and the Jets. If we agree on this, that's great because I don't know what the hell to make of either team either way. So whatever you want to – whichever way you go, that's fine.
Sure.
Patriots are 3-4. Jets are 5-2. I quite know how they're doing it, but, hey, the kids are playing. Got to give it to them for that. Mac Jones, let's try it again. We're going to run it back, and apparently Mac Jones is going to get the start for the Patriots, even though he started the last game, played one series, and got benched. For the Jets, as we talked about, Breece Hall blows out his knee. He's done, so they make a very swift move to change trade for James Robinson from Jacksonville. But Robert Saleh says it's going to be a take-it-slow situation, so I don't know if he's going to have a full commitment tomorrow. It might be more like a Christian McCaffrey last week deal where he plays like 10, 15, 20 snaps or something like that. They will not have Chris Davis, the wide receiver, has a knee injury. And this one, another slim line. Patriots are actually the favorite, minus 2.5 at the Jets.
Taking the Jets here, I think the Patriots showed that you kind of run on these guys after the Bears ran for 240 yards on them.
Oof.
Whether that's Michael Carter or sprinkling in some James Robinson, I think they're going to be – boy, if this was with Breece Hall, this would just be like a smash spot. But it wasn't to be. That's sad because he was very electric for them. So we really needs to step up. I don't want to see Mac Jones step up. I want to see Zach Wilson, the other Wilson. I want to see him step up in this game because they've been hiding him through this stretch. And, you know, since Joe Flacco got replaced when Wilson came back, he had some moments right early when he first came back. And then since then, they discovered this rushing attack with Breece Hall, and they've been able to sort of like hide the development of the quarterback. So I'm looking for Zach Wilson to kind of have to step up in the absence of that top running back and make some big throws, get Garrett Wilson involved, get Conklin involved. I think the Patriots are reeling still a little bit, you know, coming off of that embarrassing loss on Monday night. So sometimes those are the ones that kind of expose you for who you really are. And I didn't think the Patriots were that good to begin with. And the Jets are playing strong. I'll take the Jets and the points. Why not?
There's a reason they're hiding that quarterback development. It's because I don't think the quarterback's developing very well. Seems like Jack Wilson is becoming the new ghost boy there. And
I see dead people.
I think the pressure's starting to get to him, and he's not doing very well. So it's very easy to go hide behind the running game when you have something like that. But, yeah. Breece Hall had been sort of taking over that offense, and now they have to deal without him. Lots of readings in chat about how awful his play has been under pressure. Belichick knows this, so that's what you're afraid of. That's why I don't know which way to go, because I assume Belichick's going to bounce back after what happened Monday night. I assume he's going to get after Zach Wilson and put as much pressure on him as possible. But what are those kids on the Jets D going to do to Mac Jones? I don't know. They might just completely blow him up and make them make another quarterback switch and go back to Bailey Zappi. I have no idea what's going to happen. I know this. Mac dropped 307 last year in a 54-13 victory over the Jets. Therefore, I'm going to take the Jets and concur with you, because those kids are going to come in and say, nah, you're not doing that to us. Sauce Gardner ain't letting 54 on him. Damn sure. So I'm going to concur with you. And we're 5-for-5 so far.
Kumbaya, 6-for-6.
My love. Counting Thursday.
Thursday
that's
night
true.
Too.
Hey,
I
we're trying
to figure out that I can't catch up if you just agree with me on every pick.
Damn right, baby. We're going for the first completely agreed week that we've ever had, because that's never happened.
And we will go, we'll go 3-11.
All right. Let's see how we feel about the biggest spread of the week. Steelers, Eagles, the undefeated Philadelphia Eagles coming off their bye and welcoming Robert Quinn. Because they weren't strong enough on defense and pass rush.
That trash defense that's only, like, top of the league.
And still, they're giving up 5.5 yards per throw. That's microscopic for a pass defense.
I will say, though, Robert Quinn fits right in, because that defense, that front seven, is old.
Yeah, right. Him and Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox.
Fletcher Cox, he fits right in.
Big bat of Bengay in that locker room for those guys after the game. But that old D getting it done so far, get to take on the kid, Kenny Pickett, and the 2-5 Steelers, 1-3 on the road. Biggest spread of the week, Steelers are plus 11 at the Eagles in the Battle of Pennsylvania.
Right. Do you remember that first, like, 7-8 minutes last Monday night? I know you do. The Dolphins did to the Steelers.
Mm.
Expand that out for 60 minutes. Eagles squash. This one, I don't think this is a game at all. Something tells me, if this is a close game at halftime, that the Eagles aren't going to score zero in the second half. they're impressive. They're coming off the bye too. They come at you so many different ways. I mean, multi running back attack, you know, it's crazy. They just get production out of everybody in that ground game. Plus the quarterback is an elite runner. And they've got AJ Brown and Goddard. Devontae Smith, I heard, is pretty good. It's bad. The Eagles are surprising the hell out of me. I did not see the leap from Jalen Hurts coming this fast, but it looks really good. I'll take Philly squash. I don't like giving big points this year either.
Yeah, I can't say anything bad about the Eagles right now. There's nothing to say. They're undefeated. They had their big tests with the Cowboys coming in on that Sunday night, and they just put them down with ease. Would they have done that with Dak? Maybe, possibly, probably, but we will never know. But all you can do is beat who's in front of you, and that's what the Eagles have done so far. The record, they're so young. Most of them are young. The defense is old. The front seven is old. But the key players on offense, they're young. The coach is young, Sirianni. that record's going to crush them eventually. We see this. You know, the heavy is the head that wears the crown. They're the last undefeated team. Eventually, they're going to stumble. Eventually, it's going to weigh on them. The question is this the week against Kenny Smallhands? No, I don't think this is the week. I will concur and give the 11. I thought you were going to lock it up the way you were talking up that squish there.
No, you know what I'm locking up.
I do.
Yeah, you do.
Oh, okay. But Bears, Cowboys?
No!
I thought you were going bear whispering again or something, but I'm like,
no,
but they're not playing an AFC
prime
team.
Time?
No, it's not prime time. It's not an AFC team. Okay. Now I got to look down the list after I give you Bears, Cowboys, because I'm very curious now. But second biggest spread of the week, Bears at 3-4, coming off that impressive win. I guess if they got beat by the Patriots, this would be a 2-touchdown spread. I don't know. Cowboys 5-2, coming off the return of Dak last week. Didn't look exactly sharp, but it was his very first game. You wouldn't necessarily expect him to. This would be some different scenery in this game because of, not just because of Robert Quinn being shipped off by the Bears, but because of Ezekiel Elliott messed up his MCL. He's not going to play in this game. This will be the Tony Pollard show for the Cowboys, which a lot of people have been clamoring for. Bears are plus 10.5 down in Jerry World.
I don't think this is a big step back going from Zeke to Pollard, at least. Really, the story of this game for me is going to be that defense of the Cowboys has just been shutting people down. That pass rush is relentless. I think they're going to get after the Bears and Josh Fields. That was great game last week, guys. You guys bear whispered and you pulled one out for me, and you can now go back to getting destroyed like you should. Cowboys here. I'm giving them all. No bear whispering this week.
Yeah, I know what your lock is now. Got to wait till the nighttime for that one.
Yes.
Let's see Chicago build on their Ravens-like offense that's showing in New England. That was different. That was something that was very surprising. But you know what? Dallas struggles to stop the run. You know, Dan Quinn's fast but light defense, they can get pushed. They can get shoved. We've seen it. They're giving up 4.4 yards per carry this year. Bears, you know exactly what they're doing just by looking at the games on the field and then by looking at the numbers. Number one in running yards per game. DFL in passing yards per game. Everyone knows what Chicago is going to do. Coming into this game, they're going to run the football and run some more and run some more. And I don't know if the Cowboys are going to stop them. They're just a little light and a little light in the cakes there. They're not a bad defense at all, but this is the worst for them. This is just a bad matchup. So I'm taking the Bears. I'm taking the points. I'm not calling them necessarily to win, but I think they're going to stay within shouting distance. Dak's still working his way back. He might have a much better showing in his second game, but I think Chicago's going to make it difficult. They're going to run and ball control, and I almost guarantee the Bears will win time of possession, and that's a big way to cover numbers by just playing keep away. So that's our first disagreement of the week.
Which is just, that's wild.
From there, Fish and Lions up in Motown, Miami at 4-3, Detroit at 1-5. Lions are I don't know why I thought the Lions were coming off the bye, but they're not.
Because they haven't seen them actually play football in the last 3 weeks.
The Lions were off the bye last week, right? That's why
yes.
I got confused. Yeah. All right. It's late, and I'm disoriented because my wife interrupted the show, even though she knew I was doing the show. In this one, DeAndre Swift looks like he's definitely going to go. He's off the injury report. What they've been talking about him maybe coming back for the last couple of weeks after that shoulder injury, but certainly looks like he's going to be active and ready to go in this one. Dolphins and Tua are the favorite, -4 at the Lions.
Yeah, two bottom five pass defenses in this game. In that dome, on the track, Lions, they got to show something, don't they? Because, I mean, this used to be they were the auto cover team, and then they just kind of disappeared. I don't know what happened the last couple of games. But, I mean, Dallas' defense, they'll do that to you. They will shut that passing game down. Dolphins don't shut it down on the back end anywhere near as much. I think this game's actually got some shootout potential to it. Like that number at 4, so I'm going to go ahead and take the Lions. This feels like one of those heartbreak Lions losses. I could really see them losing this game on a last-second field goal or some kind of a crazy late touchdown that puts the Dolphins over by 1 or 2. They're snake bit. They sure are. They try hard, though, although you didn't see it in the results against New England or against Dallas, but I think a little bit of the home cooking on the fast track, I think that gets them going. A lot of points scored, I think, in this game.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. The Lions, how do they find a way to blow this one is my big takeaway from this one, because they've just been finding a way to blow games and blow spreads, and they got their coach being emotional. Dan Campbell is breaking up after every game. He's going to need a hanky. At the press conference after every game. I love the over. I had that in caps, take the over. So I definitely agree that it has shootout potential. The only reason I'm going to diverge and take the Dolphins is because that's a kind of small number. It might be a field goal victory, but it also might be Miami holds on by like 6, you know, at the end. Then they're both up in the 30s, but they win by a touchdown instead of a field goal. So I don't feel great about it, but we're going to disagree on that one. I will take Miami and give the 4.
All right. I am loaded up, by the way, with Dolphins DFS tomorrow on one of my lineups, nothing but Dolphins. So I can't say I disagree completely with you there.
Right. Yeah, that's not a bad play. onto the late slate. Titans and Texans, AFC South action. We know that the Titans love seeing the Houston Texans on their schedule. Tennessee at 4-2, Houston at 1-4-1 for the Titans. The big change is at quarterback, Tanny's ankle. It was iffy all week, and they finally ruled him out. So the first career start for Malik Willis at quarterback.
What
are
you talking
Titans.
About?
You're talking about Willis. For the Texans, they got wide receiver issues. Nico Collins has a groin. He's out. Brandon Cooks has a wrist. He hasn't been ruled out officially. This is a little interesting to me. Roto World smells something fishy with all of the injuries. They smell trades in the works. They basically accuse the Texans of playing games and not really – these guys aren't really hurt. They're just holding them out trying to make some last-minute deals. So I don't know anything about it, but that's what that's how they believe the Texans are rolling. I'm sure because of the quarterback change, the only reason for Houston being a one-point favorite at home against the Titans.
Yeah, I'll tell you one game that the Houston Texans don't play. It's called Stopping the Run. DFL, lowest graded team in the league against stopping the run, and their reward is to face Derrick Henry. I don't care who the quarterback is in this game. I mean, you talked about the Tanny show and, you know, how it's been canceled multiple times. I don't think there's going to be a huge drop going to Malik Willis. I don't know that this is necessarily going to be an awful thing for Tennessee, as long as you can turn around and put it in the belly of 22. He's going to open up some things in the passing game. So I have no fear in taking Tennessee in this game. As a home dog against that run D, that feels like a gift.
Yeah, I don't – I was very surprised to see the Texans favored. And Derrick Henry is the Texans' daddy. There's no doubt about that. He gets absolutely excited and aroused every time he sees Houston on his schedule, because I definitely remember a few years ago where he needed a certain number of yards to win the rushing title, and his last game was against Houston, and he goes for like 200.
It was a big number.
Water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's the deal. I don't think the Titans are feeding Derrick Henry like they usually do, and I don't think he's running quite the way he usually does. They're only averaging 3.7 yards per carry this season. This feels like a get-right spot for them, but I'm still worried that Henry is coming off the ankle injury last year isn't quite the Derrick Henry that he could be, and I'm definitely worried about starting a rookie running back, quarterback, rather, in this situation. I think Houston gets the win. I think General Mills has a nice day in the air. Titans are next to last in pass defense. I think this is the spot where General Mills figures out what he's doing in the air, and he knows he's got guys on the field that want to be there, because the guys that don't want to be there are being held back, apparently, if you look at Roto-World. But, yeah, I'm going to actually take Houston to spring the upset. And I want to see Malik Willis. I'm definitely excited to see him play. But this is his very first start. He had limited, you know, experience in college. And I want him to get the experience, but I'm not going to take him in his very first game out.
I do want to point out, though, that you can't spring the upset when you're the favorite.
Yeah, this is a very good point. It just feels like an upset.
I know. It would feel like an upset. But, yeah, I'm actually getting the point here, which it just feels so weird.
The 1-4-1
team. They hate Malik Willis that much? I mean, how much is Tanny worth?
I promise you the Titans would be favored if Tanny was playing.
He'd be favored by 4 or 5.
4 or 5. I was just about to say 4 or 5, yeah. So
we should write the lines.
It's probably worth about 5 or 6 points. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Wow. Okay.
And I'm rooting for Malik to, you know, shove it up
my
behind.
Yeah, me too. I'm actually very interested to see that one.
Yeah. All right, from there, another divisional-type battle between the Niners and the Rams out in the NFC West. San Fran at 3-4 and the Rams at 3-3 coming off their bye. Should get Van Jefferson to make his season debut coming off his knee injury for the Rams. For San Fran, they got a big injury on their side. Debo's hammy. Debo Samuel is down for tomorrow with a hamstring injury. This is a rematch of a Monday night debacle in week 4, where the Niners at home in Santa Clara put the hurt on the Rams 24-9. Their 7th straight win at the time over the Rams, sacking Matthew Stafford 7 times. They looked like he needed eyeglasses in that game. He was not making his targets when he wasn't getting sacked. He was overshooting guys and threw an interception of pick 6 right to Tufanga, I think is his name.
Tufanga?
Yeah. So anyway, in this one, the Niners are actually the slight favorite, -1 in L.A.
If I was a Niners fan going to this game, I'd make a big sign that just says, Daddy's home.
Hmm.
Because they are the daddy of the Rams, and the Rams have not been that impressive this year. And Stafford is throwing a lot of questionable balls. I mean, so is, Jimmy G. But, yeah, Debo going down means they probably lean a little more on Christian McCaffrey, which is perfect in this spot because this is his 3rd week with the team. He should slide right in. I think he can become that factor sort of in the passing game because he's a good receiver out of the backfield. They need to now rely more on Ayuk and Kittle. They own these guys. I don't think the streak snaps here. You get into the head of somebody, and it's hard to get them out. I'll take the Niners here. We should have done it last time. We didn't learn our lesson.
We both did learn our lesson this time. Sean McVay has to scheme around his protection at some point, or else just admit he's not on Kyle Shanahan's level, because this is getting ridiculous. Like, Kyle Shanahan knows every single game he goes in. He's got whatever his quarterback situation is, whether it's Trey Lance or Jimmy G. He knows he has a scheme around the Rams and Aaron Donald and whoever else is rushing with Aaron Donald. And he does it. He finds a way. He figures it out. He finds a way to scheme around it. And Sean McVay can't do it. He does not scheme around the Niners and Bosa and all those guys. I don't know why, but he doesn't. And we're both going to concur and figure it out and take the 49ers, which, of course, means the Rams are going to figure it out and get it done tomorrow.
That was possible. I mean, they're due.
They are due. All right, here is the main event of the week, the only game featuring 2 teams with winning records, and as everyone would have guessed before the season began, it's the Giants and the Seahawks.
Yeah, what a game.
Yeah. Giants are 6-1, as we mentioned earlier in the show, making Jason sick. The Seahawks are 4-3. No one has ever started a season 6-1 or better, 6-1 or 7-0, with all of their wins being by one possession, until the New York Giants. That's what they've done.
Bad.
And they get a little bit of a break going up to the Pacific Northwest because DK Metcalf looks doubtful. He's got a knee injury.
Yeah.
He's listed as questionable, but the writers look like they don't think he's going to play. It looks bad for him. And Tyler Lockett has a hammy that he played through last week that put him at 6.4 yards per catch, which is well below his season average. So I don't know how effective he's going to be out there. But as I praised Seattle for, they found some other speed, and Marquise Goodwin and took advantage of that. So we'll see if they're able to do that again tomorrow. Giants 3-0 on the road, Seahawks 2-1 at home. Cop-out line, Giants +3 at the Seahawks.
Yeah, we talked about Houston and that DFL-graded run D. Well, the Giants are 30th. So I expect this to be a big spot for Kenneth Walker, who's actually stepped in for Rashad Penny really nicely. It's like a nice change of pace. You got that rookie who can just slide right in, and he doesn't seem to have lost a beat here. And, God, wouldn't it just be perfect if the team that finally sort of ends this sort of run that the Giants is on is, oh, God, Geno Smith. it's perfect. It just, like, this writes itself, like, because I really do find the Giants to be completely fraudulent. They have run into the right opponent a whole bunch of times. And it's not easy going up to Seattle. It's not easy going east all the way up there to face that those fans and that offense right now, which is clicking. I mean, Geno is throwing some like ridiculous balls. His accuracy this season has been, I can't believe that's the same guy who we've made fun of. I mean, his nickname is not an endearing one. So,
no,
you know,
calling him old guy Geno Smith for a long time.
And I'm sure the Giants will be able to move the ball and scheme. And it, you know, it's probably going to be a lot of points scored in this game, but I'm going to side with the Seahawks here. And hopefully they can put down the Giants.
Yeah. Battle of fabulous run attacks. Both of them.
Yeah.
Kenneth Walker, of course, and Saquon Barkley and the Giants, and a battle of swinging door, swinging gate run defenses, because neither one of them are any good stopping the run. So I think it's going to be a very even matchup. I love the over in this one as well. I can both see them both up in the 30s. And Seattle lack of weapons for Geno Smith might be a factor, but you know what? The Giants can tell you all about it because they have been struggling with their wide receiver weapons all year long and somehow keep finding a way to win these games. I will concur and say the luck finally runs out and the Giants lose by more than 3. It might not be by more than 4 or 5, but eventually the luck has to run out. So I will concur with you and take the Seahawks. The Potato Skins visiting the Colts in what was going to be Carson Wentz's revenge game part 2 or 3, but he's not available. Washington at 3-4, Indianapolis at 3-3-1. The Sam Ellinger show gets started for the Colts. He is now their starting quarterback. Darius Leonard will try once again to come back from injury for the Colts. He tried earlier this year, lasted a couple of plays, and then got concussed. So he'll try to be out on the field, but Quiddy Pay with his ankle will not be there for the Colts. For Washington, Deami Brown is up for the wide receiver core, maybe. But Jahan Watson is definitely down. He is out with a hamstring injury, and they will get more Bierman, of course, at quarterback. This is also a cop-out line, Washington +3 at the Colts.
Yeah, this is interesting because Sam Ellinger has one thing that you can say about him that Matt Ryan does not. Do you know what that one thing is? He's mobile. He can move the pocket. Which with that crap indie offensive line, which used to be their strength, Matt Ryan, I mean, obviously a lot of Matt Ryan's sacks are just turtles. But getting that added dimension, the guy back there who can move, I really think is going to help them. I think that actually helps Jonathan Taylor. So he might be able to get – he's up. Yeah, Taylor's up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's going to get him more freedom to run. It also gives the quarterback more freedom to run. You probably start to see the RPOs, which then starts to free up in the passing game. I don't think this is a bad move overall for Indy. Ellinger, actually, if you go by preseason, he was impressive. A lot of these guys, Willis, Ellinger, and Desmond Ridder, these guys were all impressive in the preseason. So he's got some experience, played a lot because these teams don't play their starters very much anymore. So it's not like he's coming into this just ice cold. And I do like that added element of being mobile. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take Indy in this game. And Indy's pass D is one of their few strengths right now. And I think they'll be able to kind of shut down McLaurin, who seems to be Taylor Heineken's favorite target.
Oh, hell yeah, for good reason.
He should be. He wasn't Wentz's favorite target.
Well, that's Carson Wentz.
It was Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, Ellen, yeah, Beerman doesn't want to throw to any of those other guys except for McLaurin, and I certainly don't blame him. I don't think Beerman was going to be the best quarterback on the field if Matty Ice was playing, and I don't think he's going to be the best quarterback on the field with Sam Ehlinger playing. So, without a whole lot of confidence, I'm going to concur with you and take the Colts and give the 3.
I actually made a Sam Ehlinger lineup tomorrow.
Really?
Indeed. Well, I'll tell you why. He's $4,000.
Okay.
So just by having Ehlinger as quarterback, if he can put up 15 or 20 points, the whole rest of that lineup is just studs.
Sure.
Because it's like Derrick Henry. It's just huge studs, like Barkley. Yeah. So it'll be interesting.
All right, the Sunday nighter where Jay is certainly going against the pack and going with his
bills
that he loved before any of you fools loved. So give him all the time to talk about that. He wants Green Bay at 3-4, Buffalo at 5-1, and coming off a bye, and Alan Lazard has screwed up his shoulder for the Packers as if they don't have enough issues. Green Bay plus 10.5 at Buffalo.
Don't mean to be contrarian to Wayne Larrivee, but it hasn't really seemed to hurt the Buffalo Bills too bad that their secondary has been beat up. In 6 games, they've given up 81 points. That is ridiculous when you think about it. So that's by far the best in football. It's ridiculous how good that their defense has played. Their offense is elite. Josh Allen, they're going to just destroy these guys. What else is there to say? The Packers look like toast.
They do. Bills have given up 6.6 yards per throw this year. That's with a beat-up secondary.
That's what hurt guys.
This is from me, who I thought that was going to be their big weakness. They still don't have their number one cornerback, Tre'Davious White, back. But they don't need him when they're just rushing the quarterback with 3 or 4. The secondary can stand back there and you know, file their nails because the quarterback doesn't have time to get rid of the football. No, the Packers look awful. There's no doubt about that. Here's my, I guess, dime store psychological view. Bills aren't motivated anymore. They did it. They beat the Chiefs. They did what they were supposed to do. They're in perfect position to have the number one seed in the AFC. We know the Bills come out and kill everybody when they're properly motivated. They're not motivated anymore. They're coming off the bye. They're nice and relaxed. They had 2 weeks of people gassing them up, telling them how great they are. Karen's coming off her best quarterback grade. If you hear her on her podcast, Karen Rogers, hey, whatever's going on, not my fault. I had my best quarterback grade of the season. Look, there's no denying Buffalo's great. They may wreck Green Bay off the bye just for sport, just for fun, because they don't give a fuck. But I'm going to take the points. I get a hook there to 10.5. I'll take the points. And on Monday night, the Battle of Ohio, Cincinnati and Cleveland. Bengals are 4-3. Browns are 2-5. Jamar Chase, as we discussed, has a real bad hip. He's going to be down maybe multiple weeks for Cleveland. David Njoku, the tight end, is out with an ankle injury. In this one, Bengals are the road favorite -3 at Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm going to actually take the Browns on this one just because you got to go through that adjustment period. You got to figure out what is it going to look like without Jamar Chase. And I don't think that's going to be so easy right away. Plus Cleveland, they still have a really good pass rush. So now you've got that uncertainty of your number one not being there and a team that can get after you and sack the quarterback. I just think that's a recipe. I think Cincinnati is going to be okay, but this feels like a spot where Cleveland can kind of sneak one in on them. So I'm going to take the Browns here.
You remember last year, You remember the Bengals had some issues on offense last year. They switched to a Joe Mixon ground attack. They have to take advantage and do that this year. Jamar Chase being sidelined, I think the Bengals know how to do that. They're going to win and cover against the Browns. More on our after show. And now into our VIP after show program. I'm a husband. I'm used to blaming the wife for everything. If my wife doesn't interrupt me coming home from her
trip, hey, take it easy. She just got home.
I think we would not have been up against it like that and get you gotten cut off at the end. We had two or three weeks in a row where
Tommy, you're gonna get Giselle'd here.
Hey. Look, I'm here to play my game and I'm here to do what I do best. And if the wife doesn't understand it, she can get to stepping. No, of course, I'm being completely facetious. Well, not completely, but
yes.
We were on time. We were doing what we've been doing.
Well, we were still on time. You weren't even gone that long. You were gone like 2 minutes.
Yeah, but in that 2 minutes, I was going to get my what the fuck, and then we were going to move on and start getting ready. So.
You're good. Don't worry about it. Nothing messed up your flow.
I'm frustrated.
Yeah, another week where we disagree on both primetime games.
Yeah, that we do. Will this be more than five, or is it going to be the same five?
I'm thinking it's five.
I think it's actually five again. What in the hell is going on this year with five?
Just is it
every
five?
Week? Yeah.
Oh.
Bears, Cowboys, Dolphins, Lions, Texans, Titans, and the two night games. That's it.
Wow.
This is weird, man.
This whole season's been weird, but yes, we have disagreed on some. Now we've had some where we've started off with, because last week was technically six because we disagreed on Thursday night.
That's true.
But still, when we're actually
so
doing
five
the
on
Saturday
the
show, it has been five now for multiple, it's got to be 5 weeks now?
Yeah, 4, 5, 6 weeks in a row, something like that, yeah.
Five. It's the magic number. We're just going to disagree on five games every week, and then, you know, 3-2, 4-1. We've both gone 5-0 against each other.
Yeah,
we
both swept
two.
Each other, yeah.
And what those sweeps were fives.
They sure were.
So, and last week was 4-2 because you got me on Thursday night, and then I went 4-1 the rest of the way.
Right. Huh. Yeah, I didn't talk about my lock last week. I talked about the Seahawks over the Clippers, but I didn't mention it was a lock.
No, it was good. You're having a good run with the locks this season.
The locks are lopsided this year for some reason.
Yeah,
was it
7-1, 6-1?
6-1 right now.
Yeah, thankfully it's 1 point. So
that it is.
I can report back that the Bucks game we drove down to was a huge hit.
If I had a fucking brain in my head, I would have slammed the Bucks minus 13 over the Rockets.
You know,
I am so mad I didn't kill that.
When it's 16-0 before Houston even scored,
they got absolutely housed.
Beautiful arena.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, state-of-the-art, gorgeous. The whole outside area, that Deer District area with all the entertainment and the restaurants, it just great time. The actual in-game presentation, everything was really good. My son and my family were on the scoreboard, which is fun for their first ever NBA game. Yeah, getting on there with his sign that he's holding up says this is his first game. So that was exciting. Any sporting event I have ever been to, first time I've ever had anybody who I know or I am with on the scoreboard. So great that got to be my kids. That was an exciting moment for them. It was helpful that the Bucks look really good. They're just really good in general. Giannis is elite. I can confirm.
Oh, you can confirm that?
Have you seen him in person yet?
No.
Oh, my God. He is... It doesn't even translate on TV. Maybe some of it does, but just his, like, just speed for such a big guy and how fast he just, like, completely breaks down the other team's defense and just takes over the game. It was, you know, like everybody else is slow motion, and he's just like gliding past dudes. And there was, he had so many and ones in that game, it was ridiculous.
I'm sure it's something to watch live. I haven't seen him live, but yeah, it's amazing on TV just to see him take like three or four steps, and he's through your defense. He's just there. He's at the rim, and he's dunking.
Even if there's like a down stretch or a slow stretch, all of a sudden, you know, he'll just come back off of a timeout or something, and he'll just put up 8-10 points on you in a row.
All right, time for me to get buckets again. All right.
Yeah, every time Houston started to sneak that game a little bit closer, they got that down to maybe 12 a couple of times, and then all of a sudden, next thing you look up, it's 27.
Yeah. I didn't bet that game.
Very, very impressive. And, you know, the thing about the Bucks is they're doing this without their second-best player.
Right.
Because Middleton is hurt. That was fun. Giannis, of course, I will say, Giannis gets the biggest pop. But, man, boy, these Milwaukee fans, man, these Wisconsin, they love them some Bobby Portis, man.
Yeah, because he's nuts like they are.
He gets such a huge pop in these games. I mean, he's a good player. He's got a lot of hustle. You know, he's decent shooting, and he plays a lot of defense, but he's just that juice from the crowd. It's like WWE when he's out there, like just like feeding off of the fans more than anybody else out there. It's like fuel, and it's just funny to watch. So overall, everything A+, except I'm going to pull you now.
Okay.
The concession
had a great time,
setup,
but
the worst. Their concession setup at that stadium, absolute worst. You cannot walk up and just order your food and pay. You have to do it all through an app.
Oh.
And I tried to order my son a drink, just an icy. I just want an icy. Dad, I want an icy. That's great. Hey, there's the icy machine. This is the booth with the ICs. So you have to pull out your phone. You have to scan this QR code, and then you order it on your phone. And you put in your credit card and click and you order. Except when you click to order, for about 20 straight attempts, well, we're too busy right now.
Oh, no.
We can't process your order. Due to a high volume, we can't process your order. The best part, though, is I'm standing there 10 feet away from the icing machine, and the person who's manning the icing machine standing there doing nothing.
Oh, jeez. So something's too busy to process it, but it's not the actual worker.
It was part of the place that's actually selling. They had like burgers and chicken and other stuff. But come on, I couldn't just walk up. Hey, two ices, please. Here's your $20 for two ices.
Nope, your cash is no good here.
Nope. I can't get. Yeah, so that was my own. And when I after the game, I got the, you know, share your experience survey. Everything I graded, like, oh, I recommend this, and all the seats were great. They were comfy. They were padded. I mean, even up in the nosebleeds, up in the upper deck, it was great. The view was great. Really nice arena. But, man, I trashed that concession setup. Everything was through your phone. It was so dumb. You know, so this kind of finishes the trifecta for us and the kids, where we'd been to a Packer game, a Brewer game, and a Bucks game now, all since August.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, by far, that was the nicest of the three stadiums, but the concessions layout was absolute worst.
Yeah, I can't imagine how frustrating that would be to have to rely on an app to get something that's literally, I could just walk right up and take it with my hand. I don't need an app.
Yeah. And it's not even like it was halftime when we went to order these. It was probably like 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. There weren't even like that many people coming to pick up their food. You couldn't make me two icy drinks.
And the reasoning has got to make your head explode too, due to a high volume. Oh, you didn't anticipate a high volume at a Bucks game? Really?
Yeah.
You had no idea there were going to be this many people. You were set up for only 4,000, but you got 18,000 instead. Who could have seen that?
Yeah, that's about what. Well, I don't think that. I mean, it was a sellout. I mean, the place was packed. You know, parking was right across the street. That was great. Nice, you know, parking garage right across from the street from the stadium. I mean, we got out of the stadium. We were in our car and on the road. I mean, even getting out, you know, going down the parking ramp and everything. Everything was smooth. They funnel you right out onto the street, and then it's like a few blocks to the highway. I mean, everything was great except for that. But other than that, I had a great time. I had to use your line.
I'm glad you you and your family enjoyed it despite that.
But it also was for my first NBA game, too. Such a different experience. Because the game is so fast, you're constantly engaged with it, so you don't feel the length.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing I will say about NBA versus going to, like, a baseball game or a football game when, you find yourself kind of staring off into space. You know, there's a lot of downtime in those sports. Not a lot of downtime with basketball. It's just like you look away, bam, that ball's already moving again.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated that. It was 2.5 hours flat.
Yeah, a lot of motion, a lot of moving, a lot of moving parts.
Yeah,
and that ball gets popped around. Yeah, that's high level. Now, if you go to a college game, you're not gonna quite be as hectic or active.
Yeah.
But yeah, your first basketball game, and you saw the highest level of athleticism right there. It's something else, man. And yeah, I do want to see Giannis live at some point.
Yeah, do yourself a favor when they come down to Memphis, find yourself a seat because it's special.
He's an alien.
I mean he is.
I heard he's elite.
He's decent. He's at least he's pretty good. Jury's not out.
Case closed.
Yeah, they were just, I mean, Drew Holiday was going off, and everybody went off in that game.
Oh, man.
I
had every intention of opening up my account and depositing some money and betting that game, only because you're there and they're playing one of the worst teams in the league, and it just felt like a perfect setup. And it was. I just let it pass by. I did not.
Because you said it was 13, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, they had it covered, 6 minutes in.
So, yeah, everything, first half line, first quarter line, whole game line, it was all out there for anybody to take advantage of, and I failed to do that. As far as the concession thing goes, I don't want to scare you into thinking that the whole world is going this way, but all I'll say is...
No, it is.
Okay, well, then, I haven't been to a Redbirds game since before COVID, but through the emails I have seen that Redbirds, the park down at AutoZone Park is what it's called, is now a cashless park. You cannot
get money at the concessions there. Cashless is fine. I pay with a card.
But the fact that you can't even just order, you have to go through the app.
You can't even get in line to give some person an order to hand your card to. That was the frustrating part when clearly... it was just a bad setup. That's the way everything is going. It wasn't like I couldn't connect. The Wi-Fi was great. Everything was working, except, we're too busy to process your order. Try again later.
We're not anticipating this volume.
I'm not. I told my son finally. He's like, I'm not standing here for the whole game for an icy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get back and see the game. So we went over to some little self-serve kiosk and got him a drink and some cotton candy. And that was $38.
Oh,
I mean, I bought drinks for myself and for the family, but still. Right. But a few Diet Cokes and a couple of things of cotton candy for is $38.
I'm
glad
something...
we ate before the game. we actually ate down in the Deer District, which is a chore in itself because every place needed reservations, which was weird.
Oh, really?
Probably because it was a Saturday night. But we found one place that we were able to get a table at without a reservation, and it was actually – the food was excellent. So –
okay.
We're happy about that.
Yeah, I'm glad the entertainment district is working well and looks good down there because, as I was saying, my memories of going to Bucks games is looking around after the game's over and going, it's 10:30. Why is there nowhere to go in this city? Everything's closed. Yeah. What the hell?
Right. Yeah, well, yeah, but that was the Bradley Center. That wasn't quite what it is now.
Yeah.
In fact, when you're walking from the parking garage to the stadium, the empty, big empty lot right next to you is where the Bradley Center was.
It used to be. Okay.
Right. It's just, pavement now. crap.
A lot of memories. When I think back to when we were going to those games, that was like the mid 2000s, early to mid 2000s.
Well, yeah, because it was. I mean, I could guess. You know, living in Chicago, it's probably easier to get a Bucks ticket.
Oh, that was. It wasn't just easier. Like they sent it to us. Like I wasn't even asking.
Oh.
And it wasn't just any game. It was like a first round playoff game against Jason Kidd and the Nets. And
oh wow.
You know, we were on the back of the upper deck, so we were in literally the last row of seats. But the stadium being relatively small compared to like United Center, which is ginormous, it was still a great seat. We could see everything just perfectly fine with our backs literally against the wall of the stadium, and it cost like $10.
Yeah, the seating was very intimate in there. I liked the seating. They didn't go crazy and try to build some like 24,000. You know.
Yeah.
It's about 18 at Pfizer.
It's about what it needs to be.
Right. You know, it's a smaller market. You know, they'd probably rather have a full house at 18 than a three-quarter full house at 18. So, very, very, very nice overall. My son tried to con us into getting him a Giannis jersey. No. $150 or whatever it was for a Giannis jersey. You can go on Fanatics and buy one for $50. We're showing him, like, look, Grant, right here, same jersey on my phone. It's $100 less. I want a Bucks jersey. Grant, look, right here. You see that?
So is it the same authentic jersey or is it a replica?
I don't know. Whatever they sell on Fanatics, which is like the official thing now, most of these. I don't care if it's a replica. He doesn't know.
I know you don't care. That's what I was getting at. Was is he of that?
No.
Is he that aware? To be a jersey snob at that point? Because I am a jersey snob.
He's turned himself into like a Pokemon card snob.
Oh,
but
okay.
No, he's not a jersey snob. Although my daughter does have her authentic, customized Cubs jersey.
Oh.
With her name and her number on it, you know. So.
Okay.
That she's proud of. She wears that to school up like 3 days out of five every week. She's like me with my Miller jersey.
And for the kids listening, Miller was?
Chris Miller, former Atlanta Falcons quarterback. I had the jersey.
30 years ago.
I was president and sole member of the Chris Miller fan club. That bad. He was actually halfway decent. He just got hurt every year.
Yeah.
He was a pro, multiple-time pro bowler. He actually had himself a nice little career for a mid-league team.
You're more of a fan of him than I am of General Mills, because I'm not buying a General Mills jersey.
I'll send you one.
Oh.
I still got to send you your Fortner jersey. Zero, right? I believe he was number – or was he one?
I think he was one.
One.
Why
he was
do
number,
I remember
he was
these
one.
Things?
Eli Fortner. Remember his first name, too.
My 6'4 shooting guard, yes.
Yes. who was a completely made-up player, which is the best part of it all.
Yep.
Little real or fake, or? If you don't have it in you, don't worry. It's late.
I don't think I'm prepared for that this week.
Okay. Because I can tell you, most of them would just be fake. So, I mean, there's like four real teams and everybody else is fake. There's your list. It's easier to just play real. Bills, Chiefs, Eagles. Okay, everybody else is fake.
And everyone else is fake. Some of these fake teams are going to get into playoffs, and all you need is to get in.
Hot. Vikings are kind of legit. I don't think they're bad. They're in that second tier.
Certainly, but I hope
Cowboys
not. They get
are gonna
5-1.
Probably, there's teams that are going to get in, but there's going to be some frauds that get in this season too. I mean, if we get the Jets and the Giants, oh boy.
let's get another week and let the Seattle Giants issue play out, and we can make a better judgment on both of them based on just that one game.
I really want the Seahawks to just blow their doors off. The Giants just need a beating.
They don't get it. They keep hanging in. They're right there.
you know, that's coaching, right? That's preparedness. I mean, they're definitely taking advantage of the opportunities. You cannot fault them for that.
As the coach, with the culture change, and they're playing hard for him. That's the relying on the running game and Saquon and being able to control the ball and control the clock, and Junior Project back there as well, helping out with that. Yeah, there's a lot of things in their favor to put them at 6-1. But I understand why you don't think they're real.
Yeah, I like that. Project Junior or Junior Project.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like that. That's a new nickname. You gave Danny Dimes a nickname. No, I mean, we talked about this a show or two ago about the genius, you know, all these offensive guru genius head coaches kind of struggling, and then these kind of like grittier guys, you know, like, you know, Art Smith and Daboll, and these guys are kind of finding a little niche, you know.
You can throw, Art Smith. You're allowed to throw.
I don't know what their deal is. Although their running game has gotten more effective without Cordero Patterson.
Well, it's, that might be a couple of factors. I don't watch all their games, so I don't know if that's opponent or guys stepping up that didn't have a chance before. They are rotating some guys. It's not just Algier.
You know, you're hearing, no, it's Algier and it's Caleb Huntley. And Mariota runs too. But I mean, you hear about all these names that are supposedly available in trades now. You know, and one of them that really jumped out to me was Kareem Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because obviously, you know, Cleveland's not going anywhere, and they've got Nick Chubb. Why do they need the three-headed monster, you know, back there in the back, you know, with the quarterback with, you know, eventually it'd be Watson, Hunt, and Chubb. You don't need all that. And I'm thinking about Atlanta. Like, wow. If they win tomorrow and they're 4-4 and they're in first place, I'd send a fourth-round pick to Cleveland for Kareem Hunt.
But that's the rumors of four. You really think a four would do it?
Okay, what if I'd send them a three.
Oh, okay.
I mean, why not?
I'm sure they're holding out for, you know, something much better. And then I think there should be theoretically teams, like multiple teams, bidding for they're, you're not going to find a better running back on the trade market than Kareem Hunt. So
no. I mean, you look at what I mean. They the Jets pretty much stole James Robinson,
right?
Who's a quality back? That's a quality back. Would they pay a six?
Yeah, it wasn't much. That was a shrewd move.
Yeah, I mean, so you sometimes we find this out when we play fantasy, right? By the way, I got my check today, which was nice. For baseball.
Good.
Yeah, it was sitting on the counter addressed to Sir Jason. I was like, okay.
You didn't know you were knighted, did you?
I've been knighted, apparently. I thought I was Sir Cheapskate. Sir Spends a Little. But that's nice to come home to that. But yeah, if you're, you know, you're playing fantasy, you do that, you know that sometimes it's not about the offer or it's just about the ask. You got to ask. You got to make the offer. These teams can dangle guys like that, but if nobody's calling you, you know, so apparently nobody was, I didn't think James Robinson was getting traded. Did you?
I had no idea. He wasn't on my thought process at all.
The Jets asked, hey, we'll give you a six for this guy. You didn't spend anything to draft him. He's a UDFA. And they were like, okay.
Okay, yeah. Never know unless you ask. That's how it works.
So I'm excited for this trade deadline, though. I think this week determines where teams are headed.
I was looking up what the Chiefs gave up for Kadarius Toney because that was also a robbery. A third and a six.
You know they'll turn him around.
If anyone's going to, it will be them. And if he's going to be motivated to play his best for anybody, it should be them.
Right. You've gone from Danny Dimes to Pat Mahomes. If that doesn't motivate you, nothing will.
Yeah. That's quite the talent exchange for quarterbacks.
Yes, you've stepped up in class a little bit.
So, yeah, you're absolutely right. You never know what you're going to get unless you ask. I guess that's true for a lot of things in life, but
that's true. My wife wouldn't have married me if I didn't ask her.
Same here. I guess I'll forgive her for interrupting my show.
Oh, see, you do have a heart.
I can't stay mad at her.
You said she came back from out of town?
She's been in Reno, Nevada for since Monday or Tuesday.
It's forgivable. So it's forgivable that it's been 6 days and your wife came home and interrupted. Yes, it's okay.
I'm very happy
I'd rather be in Reno.
I don't think she had a whole lot of fun there. It was for business.
Oh,
so.
Okay. I'd still rather be in Reno.
I'm just very happy she's here safely because it was raining like hell when she left town Tuesday, and then it was dry all week, and it was raining like hell today when she came back. But thankfully, everything went okay.
That's good.
Any DFS insights for
this
weekend?
I've got like five lineups this week. I went heavy this week, so I'll tell you who I've stacked because that usually seems to be like that's the strategy, right? You want to find certain games that you want to stack up. I don't want to make another lineup. I have enough lineups. I have five lineups in this.
I kind of look at it DFS like my brackets for basketball. Like, I don't have the patience to make multiple lineups or brackets.
Yeah,
I make one
like
and hope that it goes well.
I do one a day. I listen to a DFS podcast, and then I kind of like one of them is themed around like ownership percentages, and then another one is themed on like plays of low owned guys who could be, you know, like the game changers. So it's actually really interesting. And then one of them breaks down the matchup. So it's actually really good. It's been helping a lot with this. So let's see. I've got an Eagles lineup, you know, a Vikings. I love that one. That'll be the one, of course, that does the worst. Saints. I've actually got Dalton and Kamara. And I've got that Tua lineup. That's really heavy with Dolphins. And then I've got that one where I told you where I've got Ellinger.
He's cheap.
That's the one where Ellinger, Kenneth Walker, Tony Pollard, because they should be effective. But then my receivers are like Justin Jefferson, DeAndre Hopkins. So I went heavier there.
Okay.
And then I put Pittman with him. So in case he does, you know, throw a touchdown, there's that. So that's intriguing. And then those are my main, like, those are all my $3 lineups. So I've got about $15. And then today I made a $1 lineup with Malik Willis.
Ooh. And that's definitely a dart throw.
That is a dart throw. But then that means I also paired him up with Derrick Henry and Robert Woods. So that one's interesting.
I came within a hair of making money last weekend because I stacked. I'm trying to get to the game. I'm trying to remember who I stacked.
Well, you're looking for that. It's funny because I had $12 in lineups last week on the main slate of games, and I ended up taking home 20 off of that. So
okay.
I won money. I had a $15 hit. And a $5 hit.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
So,
I was looking at the Bengals against the Falcons pass defense. So
They've been popular, the Bengals. I think Burrow the last 2 weeks has been in the $1 million lineup on DraftKings.
I believe it. So I have Burrow and Chase and Josh Jacobs and Zeke before he got hurt. Even Jerry Jeudy, because he wasn't that expensive, and he had a decent day. But came up short because Debo got hurt, and I didn't have any money left by the time I got to tight end. So I went with Mo Alley Cox of the Colts because the last time he played, the last time he played the Titans, he had two random touchdowns in that game. So what is he doing this one? Nothing. A bagel, complete zero. And I'm like, really? Now you're going to give me a zero? So that's why I came up short last week. But I had a great start with Burrow and Chase. I was like, ooh, I'm looking real good. And it just
so it's
fell
funny
apart in the
end. I'm looking at my best lineup last week. It was Burrow, Chase. I had Austin Eckler in that lineup, who had 36.7 points. I had Tony Pollard in that lineup, go figure. So he cleaned up a little bit after Zeke got hurt. But no, my coup in that lineup was Mecole Hardman.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that coming.
Who was 2% owned and
yeah.
had 28 fantasy points.
Yeah, I don't pick my DFS until like the day of because I like to get the inactives and then
right.
just kind of go from there.
Well, one thing I like about DraftKings, it will send you an alert right to your phone if you have anybody in your lineup who is inactive.
Oh, okay.
Or if who has been ruled out. I had that with NBA this week where I had a lineup and over the weekend or whatever, it was one of the games where Kawhi Leonard sits because if they play back-to-backs, usually he's been sitting one of those games. And all of a sudden I get an alert like, hey, he's not in the lineup. And it worked because I set him down. I put in somebody else who's got a huge salary. So you're getting another superstar. And I won a couple of bucks on that.
That's good. And then for my fantasy tomorrow, I get Josh Allen back. So I'm
that'll be
very happy about that.
Tua. Although I don't want to say anything, but Tua might outscore Josh Allen tomorrow.
In your vision of things, Josh Allen doesn't play in the fourth quarter because they've destroyed him so much.
Yeah, I've got some 42-10 vibes going here.
Right. So no, I'm slightly afraid of Tua lighting up the Lions and putting up more than Josh, but I'm gonna go with Josh anyway because
yeah.
he's Josh
got
Allen.
To. You've got
yep.
to. I mean, yeah, I just that. Well, Devin Singletary is probably even going to run on the Packers. Everybody runs on the Packers. James Cook is going to run on the Packers.
My last question, just slingshotting off your head, what's your snap judgment on my flex opinions? My three options would be...
Oh. Am I like doing a pick three or pick one of these? Or
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, what's your snap judgment? Romeo Doubs, Tyler Allgeier, Elijah Moore.
I'm going with Allgeier.
I think that's where I was leaning anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Elijah Moore is a head case. Who knows what he's going to do? I mean, he might just pull a Antonio Brown and...
Oh, he's not saying deuces and leaving
I'm
the
just
game.
Saying. He
should be very happy to play
stable.
Since they haven't been playing him.
Yeah, Romeo Doubs... has all the talent, but he doesn't know where to go. He's got Devin Hester syndrome.
Oh, no. Someone's got to take him by the hand and lead him up
the
field.
Yeah, there's a lot on film right now of him just completely running the wrong routes.
Oh, boy.
So that could be, you know, he's a rookie and he's learning the offense and he doesn't have that rapport with Rodgers. But, yeah, Romeo Doubs is probably the most talented just by skill receiver that the Packers have because he's got the hands. And he's always open, but he might be open in spots that he shouldn't be, if that makes sense.
Sure. And I look forward to using him going forward with Lazard being hurt. I'm not going to do it tomorrow against Buffalo.
No, Buffalo's defense, first of all, Rodgers is going to have no time to throw.
Right.
And then he's doing that against only a four-man rush, so he's going to have tiniest of tiny windows because he's throwing into seven-man coverage. And
yeah,
that's why I locked up.
He could get ugly.
It looked like everything was against them last year, remember, when they were going to go to Arizona and they had nobody?
Mm-hmm.
And they won. They won that game. But Arizona and Buffalo, this is
not quite
the same
animal. Organizations.
Correct. Yeah.
All right.
So, no, I would say Allgeier probably gives you what's the saying? He's got the highest floor.
Lowest floor.
He's got the highest floor of those three, which means you know what I mean? I think he's going to just get you a set number. The other two, you can't predict the spikes, the spikiness of those guys, but I think if you just, you know, if you're just looking for like who's going to have like the most like guaranteed points, it's just because Falcons just all they do is run.
Yahoo projects by a hair for Dobbs to be to have more points. He's got a projection of 8.9, and Algier has a projection of 8.79. So.
I would. It's kind of a toss-up. Algier gets more than that. I mean, if he gets into the end zone, you've got you're made, right?
Sure.
That's all it's going to come down to.
And it's the Panthers, and they should let him in the end zone if that's possible. They're not going to resist much.
Yeah, no, it's still even a big game for Atlanta's offense, and they're still only getting into the mid 20s.
Yes, because they refuse to throw the ball.
Because they're so slow. The clock's always running.
Insane.
Yeah, so tomorrow will actually be the first time I've been being like fully exposed to the whole Sunday slate, because 2 weeks ago we had the weekend with the funeral. So I didn't, and right. I did this, and then on Sunday we actually went to a friend's birthday party. So I only saw the Packer game. So I didn't even get. So that was just kind of I saw one game. That was when the Packers lost to the Jets. I saw that game. Last week we were in Milwaukee, so I didn't really get any exposure other than when we stopped for like a late lunch. So I got to see the end of the Packer game.
Ugh.
Yeah, they saw the touchdown to Jones, and then. That last set series, so that's why I was able to see that one with McLaurin getting that bailout catch. So I didn't see much. So tomorrow will be like, football. You know, I get a full weekend of football.
And your reward is yet another schedule in which no teams with winning records are playing each other except for one game.
I actually have, like, chores that I'm going to be working on tomorrow. Like, I got to put a bookcase together and I got to move some. So I'll be doing football will be on. So I'll be absorbing it tomorrow at least. And then, you know, when you get into that last, that 2 o'clock hour with red zone, when everything gets crazy, then I'll be glued to the TV.
Well, I'm hoping to discover a little more about these teams and learn a little more. Cause right now I kind of feel like I don't know anything about anything. And I know Buffalo is good and I'm picking against them anyway. So that shows where my head is right now.
Yeah. I can't do it. And you probably beat me because I locked them up, and I can't win a lock. So you should feel good about that.
Ooh, all right, let's go Pack. Go Pack, go. Can't believe I said that. All right, are we finished?
Yeah, I'm good. Oh, I'm yawning.
You're definitely finished. You're starting to yawn. All right, another crazy week, another week of games in which really no one should have a whole lot of confidence in their picks, but we'll see how it all works out. Week 8 and leading into week 9, we will be back to talk about week 8 next week, where we'll find out if Jay's prediction is true and if the Broncos will be looking for a new head coach at that time. And we will review
week 8 next weekend. If that happens, that would be so – I mean, come on. That would be all time.
Yeah, because you called that weeks ago.
Like week 2 or week 3 when I looked at the schedule, I was like, that's it right there. He's gone. He's not coming back from London, baby.
You've had it out for him for quite a while. That's for sure. All right, next Saturday. Any issues?
Nope.
Next Saturday again?
I should be good for Saturdays this whole month.
Okay.
The only one that's questionable is the 19th because there's a family gathering that night, but those don't usually interfere. But if I'm suspicious that it might, then that would be a Friday. But no, we should be good on Saturdays for a long time.
All right. So next Saturday to recap week 8 and get into week 9 as the season rolls on, the second longest season ever after last year, and getting into the second half of the season, which has been such a roller coaster so far. And we'll see how it all progresses from here. All right. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Everybody, enjoy your football tomorrow. Enjoy your Halloween on Monday, however you decide to celebrate that. And we will be back to talk to you next weekend, next Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, recapping week 8 and picking our games for week 9. And we will talk to you then.